rated AM 1150 KNRC, Inglewood, Denver's premier talk station.
KNRC News Time, 12 o'clock.
NBC News Radio, I'm Bob Kerr at the White House. Church bells here in Washington and around the country tolling in tribute to Ronald Reagan. His funeral, attended by world leaders, was held at the National Cathedral. President Bush said America's 40th president is deeply missed.
Ronald Reagan belongs to the ages now. But we preferred it when he belonged to us.
Mr. Reagan's body will be buried later today in California. An interrogator tells the Washington Post the people who handled the prisoners in Iraq competed to see who could create the most fear. The newspaper reports some of them were ordered by intelligence officers to use dogs to intimidate prisoners. Dangerous times in the African nation of Congo. There's been an attempted coup and heavy fightings reported in the capital there. The government says things are now under control, but that's not clear. Bob Kerr, NBC News Radio.
Get the good stuff.
If you've got an engine with over 75,000 miles on it, here's something to think about. High mileage engines often perform differently. With increased oil consumption, lower fuel efficiency, and more rapid oil breakdown, Valvoline Max Life Motor Oil helps offset the aging of critical engine parts and seals. This is the good stuff. And right now you can get Valvoline Max Life Motor Oil for just $1.99 a quart. Price does not include state and local taxes and recycling fees.
Get the good stuff.
Napa. Get the good stuff.
Thinking about buying a used vehicle from a private owner? Think about this. Every Ford Quality Check certified pre-owned vehicle has to pass a rigorous 115-point inspection. The ones that do qualify come with 6 years, 75,000-mile powertrain, limited warranty coverage, and 24-hour roadside assistance. Think you'll get a 3.9% interest rate from a private owner? I don't think so. If we don't certify it, it's just used. Not all buyers will qualify for Ford credit financing. Take delivery from dealer stock by June 30th, 04. See dealer for warranty details or visit FordCPO.com.
Winner of 8 Associated Press Awards for journalistic excellence, including Best Newscast, award-winning news and entertaining talk. This is Denver's AM 1150 KNRC.
Good afternoon. Mostly sunny and 70 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin, KNRC News. Damage estimates from the storm this week have risen sharply. I'll have that story in a moment. First, let's check traffic with Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
Northbound I-25 still pretty heavy from about Arapahoe Road now up through Hamden. The reason for that is an injury accident northbound at the Hamden Avenue Bridge. Fire rescue equipment on the scene there. Hopefully they'll get that out of the way here in just a few minutes. Everything else around town much lighter than usual because of the holiday today. Colfax and Manila Road, though, and Watkins, an overturned vehicle, just the one. Nobody hurt, but there may be a fuel spill involved in that one, too, so the fire department from the city of Bennett is on the way to take care of that. Also, a structure fire reported at 60th and Washington. CDOT work zone with the information. You might be a good driver, but not everyone out there is. So when driving through a CDOT work zone, pay attention for those who aren't and slow for the cone zone. Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
Earlier this week, State Farm Insurance had estimated the damage from this week's storm could exceed $7 million, and it has. The Rocky Mountain Insurance Information Association now says the total is estimated to be $100 million. By comparison, the hailstorm we had in July of 1990 rang up a cost of $625 million in damages. This report brought to you by Quest Choice Business. The second leading cause of unintentional injury-related death for kids ages 1 through 14 is drowning. This from Barb Bailey of the State Health Department, who, with the arrival of the hot weather, urges parents to do all they can to prevent such accidents.
Unfortunately, drownings happen so quickly that it's really important that parents or caregivers are around their kids constantly when children are around water of any kind. So supervision is probably the key to drowning prevention.
She says other ways to prevent kids from drowning is for the kids to take swimming lessons and for parents to learn CPR. The labor unions that work for United Airlines have come to an agreement with United to raise medical benefits for retirees. The agreement came yesterday, and though the medical benefits go up, life insurance coverage will end for most of the retirees. A Chicago judge still has to approve that agreement. In sports, Aaron Cook takes the mound for the Colorado Rockies today as they start a three-game series against the Tampa Bay Devil Rays in Florida today. Rocks lost all three of their games to the New York Yankees this week. Quest Choice Business, your business line plus any five features for just $39.99 a month. Over 100,000 small businesses have already signed up for Quest Choice Business, shouldn't you? Your exclusive Weather Channel forecast is next. KNRC News Time is 12:04.
We know you're busy running your lives. That's why we'll keep up with what the government is trying to do to you.
What's going on here?
Denver's new generation of talk radio. AM 1150, KNRC.
On June 19th, Hazel Miller, Lanny Garrett, and many others perform at the 22nd Annual Highland Square Street Fair in the heart of North Denver at Denver's Historic Highlands. It's the best in Denver's local music scene, and best of all, it's free. Join 30,000 of your closest friends for favorites Buckskin Stallion, Laura Newman, Nacero, and more as music fills the street at two stages Saturday, June 19th. Don't miss the fun at Denver's best street fair, filling the streets at the intersection of 32nd Avenue and Lowell Boulevard. Food, beer, and cocktails, and dozens of arts and crafts vendors, plus an interactive kid zone for family entertainment. It's all on the street. Come out this year and see great live music on two large stages and plenty to do in between. It's great fun for the entire family. The Highland Square Street Fair at 32nd and Lowell in historic North Denver happens on June 19th.
Brought to you by Community Banks of Colorado, KNRC, and Chipotle. See you there.
Stephanie DeLuca with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. A drier weather pattern setting up for the next few days. Mostly sunny today, breezy. Those winds 15 to 25 miles per hour, are high 80. Clear one tonight, cool down to 47. For tomorrow, partly cloudy 79. And Sunday, partly cloudy, isolated late afternoon thunderstorms and a high of 85. For the Weather Channel, I'm Stephanie DeLuca on AM 1150, KNRC.
70 degrees under mostly sunny skies. KNRC News Time is 12:06. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 12:35 or when it breaks on AM 1150, KNRC.
From AM 1150, KNRC, Denver's choice for talk. Now, one of the Mile High City's most compelling talk hosts, Enid Goldstein. The producer is Joe Anderson. Board operations, Jordan Lyles. Now, here's Enid.
Hello, Colorado, on a typically glorious June day in the Rocky Mountains. This is the Enid Goldstein Show, but I bet you've figured out already, this is not Enid Goldstein. Enid's off today, and as you all know, Enid is, I think, by far the premier noontime talk show host in the whole Rocky Mountain region. She's so good that nobody could replace her, and we're proving that today because they hauled in an absolute nobody to take her place. That would be me, T.R. Reed. I'm a local reporter, and I'm delighted to be here. As you will find shortly, I'm a total klutz as this talk show host. I'm awful at it, but we have two saving graces when I come in here and sit in for Enid. And the first is you. We just have terrific callers. These are people that Enid had nurtured over the years. We love to hear from you. Give us a call at 303-382-1150. It's 1150 a.m. 303-382-1150. I guarantee you your call is going to be a lot more interesting than anything I have to say. So give us a call, and that'll really keep the show going. And here's what I'm going to do. If you're a first-time caller, I promise I will not give you a kiss the way Enid did. That ought to do some people. The other thing we do when I fill in for Enid is I try to get out of the way. And you got to admit, I have really great guests when I'm in here. As you may remember, the last time I did Enid's show, we had the world's leading ethicist, Professor Peter Singer of Princeton University, was here, and you called in with some great ethical quandaries for him to deal with. It was a great show. And today, I think we may even top that one. So let me give you, for the next 3 hours, our plan of the day here on AM 1150 KNRC on the Enid Goldstein Show with T.R. Reed, unfortunately, sitting in for Enid. Plan of the day. When I was in the U.S. Navy in the first Vietnam War, the last time we were in a quagmire overseas, they used to make us stand outside our cabins at 5 in the morning in this chilly corridor, and some guy would say over the PA system, plan of the day, and then he'd tell you what we were having for breakfast and what drills we were going to have in the afternoon. I thought it was very Mickey Mouse, but as a matter of fact, it turned out to be useful because if at 4 in the afternoon the captain suddenly announced, look out, the Soviets are attacking, instead of having a heart attack, he remembered that in the plan of the day they told you we were going to have that drill in the afternoon, and it helped a lot. So here is the plan of the day for Friday, June 11th on the Enid Goldstein Show. In the first hour, you ready for this? We are going to solve your Father's Day giving problem. Yes, if your dad has every fishing rod, every golf club, and every grilling accessory known to man, worry not. because we are going to show you the best Father's Day present you can give this year. And that is a fantastic, really exciting new book, perfect for our region, William Clark and the Shaping of the West. This is a book just published by distinguished historian and author Landon Y. Jones. And if you remember that name, William Clark and the Shaping of the West, yes, that's the Clark of Lewis and Clark, a great American hero. But as this book demonstrates, and as Mr. Jones is going to tell us in just a minute, if I were to stop blabbing and get to him, William Clark, beyond the Lewis and Clark expedition, played a huge role in shaping and building the future of our part of the United States. So in the first hour, we're going to have the author of William Clark and the Shaping of the West, Landon Y. Jones, at which point you run down to a tattered cover and buy this book for your dad and don't worry about Father's Day any longer. In the second hour, we're going to deal with the sad historic fact that today we buried Ronald Reagan, one of our nation's most popular presidents, and I personally feel a great leader for our country. And we're going to talk about a topic that came up in the Washington Post, and I think it must be true because that's my newspaper, and therefore if we said it, it must be right. This is a term called the stature gap. And the argument is that by standing up at President Reagan's funeral today and giving a speech, President George W. Bush showed the huge gap in stature between former presidents and our current president. I'd like to know how you feel about that. Do you think that George W. Bush measures up? Is he Reagan-esque in stature, or is there a stature gap? We'll talk about that, and we'll talk about some memories I had as a reporter for the Washington Post covering Reagan in those years. And then in the third hour, this is really going to be good, we're going to talk about the most exciting, important new school in the Denver public school system. This is the Denver High School of Science and Technology. Have you ever heard of it? I bet most people haven't heard of it, but ladies and gentlemen, you're paying for it. If you live in Denver, you voted for a bond issue last fall that is going to fund this brand new school that is going to make our state a magnet for science and technology teaching at the secondary level for the whole country. And we're going to have David Greenberg, the president of this new school, in to talk about the concept of the school and the concept of charter schools or choice schools in general in a public school system. So a pretty good day on the Enid Goldstein Show, even though you're stuck with T.R. Reid as the host. But let's begin by talking to author and historian Landon Y. Jones. If I can hit the right button. Mr. Jones, are you there? Did I get you?
Yeah, I'm right here, T.R.
Good, good. Nice to have you here. Landon Jones was a reporter and a historian and an author of several good books, and you're a member of the Lewis and Clark Bicentennial Commission or something, is that right?
Yeah, I'm a member of the board of the group that's been planning the sort of rollout of the Lewis and Clark Bicentennial, which really started a year ago in 2003 in Monticello. And it sort of follows the progress of the expedition across the country. And there's just been an amazing amount of excitement and local celebrations involving the bicentennial, which lasts all the way until 2006.
So June 11th of 2004, where were they? Of 1804, I'm sorry.
Yeah, 1804, they were going up the Missouri River. They were not too far from St. Louis, about halfway between St. Louis and Kansas City. And they were just beginning to figure out how strong the Missouri River's currents were. And they'd already had a couple of near-death experiences. I mean, Lewis had fallen off a cliff and barely caught himself and saved himself. And the boat had gone out of control and spun around three times in the river. So the adventure was beginning.
Yeah, cool. Right about this time. Boy, 200 years ago. That's amazing. Now, this is your second book in this general area. You did a Lewis and Clark book that I loved. Do you think, Mr. Jones, this is because you come from St. Louis that you're so interested in these people?
Because I'm interested in Lewis and Clark? Yeah, because of St. Louis, I think. They started on the Missouri River in St. Louis, and so I sort of grew up, playing in the shadow of statues of Lewis and Clark and Jefferson. And, you know, Sacagawea, there are more statues of her than any other woman in American history scattered around the country.
Is that right, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Did they put Sacagawea on a dollar? Is that right, or a coin?
Yeah, they did. They put her on a silver dollar coin, and I'm not sure how well that's done. People are still fighting off the dollar coin, you know.
Yeah, I like it myself, but I think I was in another country at the time when that coin was flourishing.
Yeah,
but
a lot of people will collect them. And then, of course, a couple of weeks ago, they just introduced a 37-cent first-class postage stamp with Lewis and Clark, you know, with peering through the telescope on one of them, and another kind of premier stamp, as they call it, that has portraits of Lewis and Clark on it.
Oh, I see. You pay extra. You pay more than 37 cents, and
you do.
Some of the money goes to...
You pay a premium. I mean, it's almost twice as much, I think. And I got a bunch of them. It's hard for me because I throw out all the Lewis stamps and only use Clark on my list.
You're Clark's biographer. You're going to be loyal.
Yeah.
That's really decent of you. If there hadn't been a Lewis and Clark expedition, would we today be interested in William Clark?
Yes. I think that you got right at the point there, TR, that I think Clark would be better known and better understood if he had not gone on the Lewis and Clark expedition.
Really? That's fantastic.
Yeah.
How come?
Yeah. The reason would be that after the expedition, Clark took a series of jobs in St. Louis. And he was the top federal official in St. Louis for about 30 years after the expedition. And in that time, he was in charge of all Indian relations west of the Mississippi. And that turned out to be the most important relationship that our nation had at that time. It was signing treaties with Indians, trying to keep them from joining the British in the War of 1812, clearing out land for the Indians who were removed from the east. And that was a great and prolonged tragedy. And in a lot of ways, the Indian removal story becomes the heart of my book in the second half of Clark's life.
What do you think about that term, Indian removal? That was their term. Do people find it offensive today?
Oh yeah, I mean it's because the more you learn about it, the worse it seems.
Yes.
I mean, Clark and his contemporaries basically thought that the Indians east of the Missouri River could not survive. They would either be overrun and basically killed by white people, or the land would be taken from them, and their societies would collapse. And so they said the only way to save them is to move them. But the real truth
is
that
sounds like that village in Vietnam, doesn't it?
Pardon?
Sounds like that village in Vietnam.
It does, because the irony turned out to be that saving them, the act of removing them, was killing them. And many thousands, you know, died, starved, their cultures were destroyed. And so the fact that so many tribes are healthy now is one of the most amazing things that I think in American history, and you feel it now that for example, if Lewis and Clark were to come back this year,
yes,
and look at our country, and you say what would they think would amaze them? What would amaze them the most would be that the Indian tribes were still here, and they were still surprisingly healthy.
They would have thought they'd be assimilated, you mean, or just gone?
Pardon me?
They would have expected the tribes to be assimilated.
Yeah.
Into,
yeah, they would have thought that they would basically be assimilated. That was their goal.
Oh,
and the idea was that the Indians would be relocated in the west and once from the east and learn the white man's farming techniques and eventually and slowly adapt to European civilization. But what was so ironic about that was that the Indians in the east already knew how to farm. They were very good farmers.
Yes, they taught the Pilgrims famously.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and whenever we wage war against the Indians in the east, we tried to burn all their farms, you know. So it's just full of irony and sadness and
yeah, tragedy.
But
really,
it's a part of Clark's life and our history that I think we sort of need to get our arms around and understand to understand what is happening today with Indian relations and relations with places like the Middle East. I mean, you know. TR, you were mentioning the quagmire of Vietnam and potential quagmire of Iraq, and in Clark's life that he was in charge of an American military effort to forcibly occupy an ancient tribal land.
You know, and, reading your book, that's what I was thinking. God, we've been here before, you know?
Yeah.
I thought reading your book that there was also this... the book William Clark and the Shaping of the West, the new book by Landon Y. Jones, I thought there was this kind of ambiguity in official Washington as whether the Indians were a vicious enemy or whether they were people we should learn to live with. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. I think that early on in this nation's history, when we were contesting with the British for the lands of the West, and particularly the Northwest and the upper Mississippi River, that the Indians were critical allies. And so the goal was to be friendly with the Indians, to befriend them. You know, the Great White Father would befriend the Indians and to keep them from falling into cahoots with the British. And then, but once the British lost the War of 1812 and retreated to Canada, essentially,
yeah,
the Indians could no longer play off the American soldiers against the British soldiers.
Oh.
And they were forced to deal only with us. And then all of a sudden the attitude changed in Washington. And we said, okay, now we've got them where we want them. And then what we want is their land.
Got
and
it.
So that became the story after the War of 1812. And that's when Clark was, well, he was there during the War of 1812, but afterwards as well.
Got it. Now, I think we do have to talk some about the Lewis and Clark era of Clark's life. And I tell you what, Mr. Jones, we'll do that after we take a break. But for now, this is T.R. Reid filling in for Enid Goldstein on AM 1150 KNRC.
AM 1150 KNRC, the way Denver spells talk radio. KNRC.
Hi, this is Doug Kellett. Tune in Tuesdays and Thursdays at 4:55 as I discuss financial issues of the week with Willis Ashby of Integra Financial, right here on AM 1150 KNRC.
Phil, what is all this?
We're trying to beef up our advertising for the Mile High Suburban Buy. Decided to give these Gregorian monks a try.
What's the Mile High Suburban Buy?
It's the newest way to sell your car. It's all the rage.
I can hear that.
See, we offer sellers access to over 500,000 readers in 19 Suburban newspapers. You know, the ones you actually read.
Gotcha. How much are you charging?
$29.99.
They're really taking this seriously.
Yeah, we all are. There are a lot of ways to sell your car, and we want to be the best. We've put together a crack team of classified employees who'll help you craft your message and make your ad work for you. We're serious about helping real people and real communities sell their cars fast for less.
Sounds great. I've got a car I'd like to sell.
Just call Community Classifieds at 303-279-5541. That's 303-279-5541. Okay, he gets it.
Sorry. Call Community Classifieds today, 303-279-5541.
We found the greatest location for our store in this older city neighborhood. The place was in complete disrepair, but we had a vision.
Business owners with a vision and a decrepit storefront. Perfect time to call Broadway Construction at 303-926-4410. Broadway Construction offers complete construction services for commercial projects and home repair and remodeling projects of all sizes.
So I shared our vision for the store with Lauren from Broadway Construction, thinking there's no way they can pull this off. Lauren assured me the project was something they could do from conception to completion and within our budget. They worked with us and guided us through each phase of the restoration and remodeling. Our store opened on time and within our budget, and it matched our vision. I was so impressed with Broadway that I've had Broadway redo our basement in Castle Rock, and they restored our friend's house in Boulder.
Start your construction project by calling 303-926-4410. When it comes to commercial or home construction projects of all sizes, do it the right way with Broadway.
Tune in to AM 1150 KNRC on Saturday mornings from 7 to 8 a.m. for the Kiefel Cycling Hour, featuring seven-time Tour de France competitor and Olympic bronze medalist Ron Kiefel. Ron and Megan will talk about cycling news, equipment, and great local rides. It doesn't matter if you're training for the Tour de France like Ron Kiefel, or in Megan's case, just taking those training wheels off for the first time. The Kiefel Cycling Hour has something for everyone, every Saturday morning from 7 to 8 a.m. on AM 1150 KNRC.
I'm Jennifer Slaw, CNBC Business Radio. Former President Ronald Reagan may have passed on, but you may soon have a constant reminder of him in your wallet. Republican lawmakers are mulling over enshrining the image of the nation's 40th president on the $10 bill. There have also been suggestions to have his face grace the dime. But Democrats are less than thrilled. Senate Majority Leader Tom Daschle has said historians really should be allowed to consider this one carefully. Daschle's not sure whether putting Reagan's image on U.S. currency is the best way to honor him. And others, let's say, were less diplomatic. A senior congressional aide said to Reuters, "What's next, putting Ronald Reagan on Mount Rushmore?" Meantime, a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier, an airport, and a large government building already carry Reagan's name. Meantime, the U.S. Postal Service has already announced it will issue a new stamp next year to honor the former president. It will be issued on February 6th, which would have been Ronald Reagan's 94th birthday. I'm Jennifer Slaw for CNBC.
We are the Denver radio station that will make some sense out of this crazy world.
Blah, 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 blah.
Our hosts are standing up for you.
Thank you.
AM 1150, KNRC.
Hi, I'm Doug Kelly. Join me weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 here on AM 1150 KNRC. Now back to Enid Goldstein.
Hi, Colorado. We are back to Enid Goldstein's show, but as you've already figured out, we're not back to Enid Goldstein. Unfortunately, you're stuck with me today, T.R. Reid, arguably the world's worst talk show host, but I do have great guests. And our guest today is the author of a really fascinating, to me, new book, William Clark and the Shaping of the West by Landon Y. Jones. Mr. Jones, you're still there, I hope.
I'm sure I am, T.R.
Yeah, good. The reason most people would know William Clark was because of this expedition that's named after him, the Lewis and Clark Expedition. How did he get involved in that?
He got involved because Clark had met Lewis about 10 years before the expedition when they were both fighting in the Indian Wars in the Ohio Valley.
Okay.
And Clark was an older man. I mean, when they met, Clark was probably the most promising young officer in the American Army. Lewis was one of the least promising. He had just been court-martialed. He was in serious trouble, and they assigned him to Clark's unit to kind of season him.
William Clark had a brother. George Rogers Clark was his brother?
Yes, George Rogers Clark. People often think that it was his father because they were 18 years apart in age. But
yeah.
But Clark was from a family of 10 children, and George Rogers was the second of 10, and William was the ninth. Billy, they called him. Billy was the ninth.
Billy, yeah. George Rogers Clark is sort of a name out of everybody's American history course that you vague, but he was also a general in the Indian Wars. Is that right?
Yes, he was. And he was an early hero of the Revolution. It was he who secured, you know, the states, really, of Ohio, Indiana, and Illinois. You can make a case for Michigan. For the emerging American Republic by defeating the Indians and the British force there.
Really, really.
Yeah.
I noticed in your book you have such good stuff on Clark's family. There are a lot of diaries and stuff left over that you found?
Yeah, there's an abundance of diaries. I mean, thank goodness people in those days didn't send emails because there's so many people save their diaries and save their letters, and they're just fantastic letters. Clark was a journalizer all his life, and so not only did he keep, Lewis was a sort of a troubled individual, and he had trouble with a lot of issues, and one of them was he did not keep a good record of the expedition.
Oh.
Whereas Clark kept a record every single day and wrote down everything they did, and really much of what we know about the Lewis and Clark expedition itself comes from the hand and maps and map of William Clark.
I remember a really gripping line, which I think was in your earlier Lewis and Clark book, but you were talking about how alive the chronicles of the journal are, and you say we are in the canoe with Lewis and Clark when they first see the Pacific Ocean.
Yes, when they come up in the fall of 1805, and they come up to the ocean, and they see the tidewaters on the Columbia, and Clark writes in his journal, and you can see this in his journal, almost with his hand shaking, "Oh, the joy, ocean in sight!" Exclamation point.
Isn't that thrilling?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think you really captured the thrill of finding that. But how did you get these diaries? I mean, they've been there for 200 years. How'd you find them?
Well, a lot of them are kept, and this is interesting, T.R., they're kept in the Missouri Historical Society in St. Louis.
Is that right?
And these diaries are going on tour along with an amazing exhibit, the National Bicentennial Exhibit of Lewis and Clark stuff. And it's coming to Denver. Your listeners will have a chance to see it next summer. It'll be at the Denver Museum of Nature and Science.
Oh, fantastic.
Between
That's
great. It will fill the museum, but it'll be a big exhibit between May and September of 2005. And they have everything that has survived this expedition is in this show. And so there's amazing things that there were the medals that the Indians were given by Lewis and Clark. There are all the letters that Jefferson wrote to Lewis saying, organize this thing, and the letter Lewis writes
really?
To Clark saying, will you join me? And plus a lot of Indian objects that were brought back by Lewis and Clark from the expedition.
So as a researcher, what's it like dealing with this? Is this stuff hard to read?
No, it's surprisingly clear that these journals are. They both had clear, good handwriting. They were not good spellers.
Yeah, I know. I remember you described Clark as a fearless speller, I think you
fearless,
said.
Fearless.
A lovely word.
He never lost his fear. The word Sioux Indian.
Yeah.
He spelled that 27 different ways in the course of writing the journals, but he never once spelled it correctly, or at least the way we spell it now.
Well, you know, I was recently up in the Dakotas on some people call the Sioux Reservation, and as I think you know, there's a movement in the tribe to go back to Lakota.
Yes.
On the ground that Sioux is a French word for snake, and therefore...
Yes.
But that issue wasn't around at the time, I think. They just used the French name for this tribe.
Yeah, although you see in the journals, they will say Dakota, Lakota, and also the bands. They were identified as Brule Band and bands that have the same names now.
Yeah, so they had a good awareness of who they were dealing with.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Did you have to track down Clark's descendants today, to his family, to... Do any
well, about half the population of St. Louis believes they are descended from William Clark. There are lots of them. They had
Would this include the Jones family, too?
In St. Louis in May when the expedition celebrated the bicentennial of leaving St. Louis. And there were 100-plus people there. And they rededicated Clark's gravesite, which is in a cemetery called Bell Fountain that overlooks the junction of the Missouri and Mississippi rivers.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and lots of Clarks were there?
Lots of Clarks were there, including a direct descendant named Bud Clark, who was a good friend of mine and a good source for all of this.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really?
But Bud Clark likes to dress up in these sort of recreator outfits like his great-great-great-grandfather, William Clark.
So what would you wear if you wanted to look like William Clark?
Well, you would wear kind of a bizarre-looking cap. It's not a, coonskin cap is what people imagine.
Yeah, with the tail down the back.
But you wear a military cap, and it's just sort of big affair. It's called a tricorn, or I forget the exact name.
Oh, like Admiral Horatio Hornblower.
But it was a military expedition. They were wearing military gear.
Ah.
So they were wearing sort of vintage Revolutionary War type uniforms and carrying these sort of muzzle loading flintlocks and sort of. It's pretty amazing.
Weren't they wet all the time?
Were they what?
Wet all the time.
Were they wet all the time?
Yeah. That's one of the striking things to me about the journals is they're sitting in a canoe in the Missouri River writing this, and somehow the journals survived dry.
Yeah, well, they kept good care. They packed the journals extremely tightly in a tin box. That one time it fell into the water, and guess who saved it? Chicago Weir.
Really? Yeah. Oh, fantastic. Boy, you owe her a debt.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, yeah, all you historians do. Yeah.
Yeah.
So were Lewis and Clark as respected and famous in their day or right after the expedition as they are today, 200 years later?
I think when they returned from arriving at the Pacific and returned to St. Louis, they were celebrated. People didn't really know quite what they'd done. I mean, it has one of these aspects of a feat like climbing Mount Everest or putting a man on the moon. I mean, it has a symbolic importance. It's very resonant.
Yes.
But having said that, no one ever went the way they went again. Because it was too hard and too difficult. It was the long way. And later on, trappers and explorers discovered South Pass and the Oregon Trail, and they went a completely different way.
Yeah, along the Platte River would have been...
Yes, exactly,
right,
along the
yeah.
Platte River.
That's how people got to Colorado, I just want to point out. So,
yes, well, yeah. true enough. And no one ever took the long way around the Missouri River all the way up to, into northern Montana.
Yeah.
And then the territorial claims were not really established by Lewis and Clark. That all came later. We were still fighting over Oregon in the 1840s.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And so you can anyhow that they were wined and dined. They went to the White House, and there was sort of much tossing of caps in the air.
Yes.
But then people sort of forgot about them, and history books published late in the 19th century, early 20th century, would give a paragraph to Lewis and Clark, but people like John Charles Fremont and Pike, particularly Pike, were much, much better known for years and years.
We love Zebulon T. Pike here in Colorado. He
right.
named one of our, if you're marching across Colorado from Kansas, the first of the 14,000-foot mountains you see is the one he named Pike's Peak.
I know, but I think, he... Some say he didn't name it and didn't climb it, and we may never have seen it.
I think he said it was unclimbable. Today, I've climbed it, and if I can climb it, anybody can climb that mountain. But,
yeah, of course, I mean, that means a car can get to the top.
Yeah, cars can get to the top, too, but I just want to tell you, Mr. Jones, that's cheating. If you're ever in Colorado Springs looking at Colorado at Pikes Peak, don't drive up it. You got to walk.
Okay.
It takes 7 or 8 hours. You can take the train back down. I think that's legit.
Okay.
But I think our callers on KNRC AM will tell you that that's cheating to drive up. You got to walk up Pikes Peak. Unfortunately, we got to take a break, but it's pretty good time. Now we're finished with the famous expedition, and we'll talk about William Clark's post-expedition role in the shaping of the American West after we take a break for the news with Tim McLaughlin on 1150 KNRC.
Award-winning news and entertaining talk. This is AM 1150 KNRC.
Good afternoon. Mostly sunny, 70 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin, KNRC News. Damage from this week's storms are higher than originally thought. I'll have that story in a moment. First, let's check the roads. Here's Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
Northbound I-25 is heavy from I-225 on up toward Hampden. That's because of an earlier injury accident. The jam is starting to improve somewhat. That accident also causing delays on the ramp from southbound I-225 to the northbound valley. Traffic there is jammed back to Parker Road. Once you get north of Hampton, breaks free for a few minutes, and then you find a tail end of a slowdown at Colorado Boulevard, and that continues on up toward University Boulevard because somebody dropped a batch of golf clubs and a baby stroller in the lanes of traffic. Authorities are trying to get those items out of the way. Southbound I-25 at the Erie exit, a report of some debris in the highway there. Kipling, make that Union in Cedar. Injury accident in Lakewood. Two tow trucks needed to clean the wreckage out of the intersection. Northwest Parkway with the information. Drive the Northwest Parkway and win. The more you drive, the more you're entered to win what's in the box. So start driving the Northwest Parkway. Visit NWPKY.org to see the rules and restrictions. Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
Tuesday's and Wednesday's storm did more damage than the original estimates predicted. The two-day total is now about $100 million. That's up from the first estimate of $7 million. Still nowhere near the amount of damage from the July 1990 hailstorm. That one caused $625 million in damage, one of the most costly insurance catastrophes ever. This report brought to you by Tyson Foods. Two more women have now come forward saying they were sexually assaulted by 44-year-old Michael Ricks, who is accused of posing as a doctor. Ricks, who allegedly posted phony credentials on his office walls at different times, claimed to be a massage therapist, a physical therapist, and a chiropractor. He's being held at the Douglas County Jail. If you still feel like you need to get some skiing in, this will be your last weekend to do that in Colorado. Arapaho Basin, the only Colorado ski area still open. A Basin had hoped to stay open until the 4th of July, but unusually warm temperatures prevented that this year. Four of A Basin's 69 runs are open. Conditions are slushy. Family meal tonight, look for Tyson fully cooked beef roasts, hickory smoked bacon, and chicken nuggets at your neighborhood grocer. Great tasting, high quality. Look for Tyson products in the bright red packaging. We'll take a look at the KNRC weather forecast next. KNRC News Time is 12:37.
No matter how you say it,
News. It
is what we do best.
News.
This is Denver's premier talk station, AM 1150, KNRC.
News.
Shopping for a mortgage should be no different from shopping for any big-ticket item, a car, a refrigerator, a house. You're looking for the best possible value available. Investment Property Funding Incorporated offers just that. The best mortgage rates available, starting at 1.25% for primary residences and just 1.65% for investment properties, with no points, no junk fees, and no surprises at closing. Increase your cash flow by hundreds, if not thousands of dollars per month. Investment Property Funding can handle all your mortgage needs with your choice of fixed rate, adjustable rate, or interest-only programs. We have a full menu of options for savvy, no-nonsense borrowers like you. Don't wait. Get the rates you deserve today by calling the professionals at Investment Property Funding Incorporated at 303-531-8508. That's 303-531-8508. Your mortgage experts, 303-531-8508, or online at ipfunding.com.
J. Checking the KNRC weather forecast. Mostly sunny and breezy for us this afternoon. Clear skies tonight. Will cool off to the mid to the upper 40s for tomorrow. Partly cloudy. Upper 70s for tomorrow's high. Mostly sunny and 70 now. KNRC news time is 12:39. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 1 o'clock or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
An OnStar conversation, April 1st, 2004.
OnStar Center, this is Alicia. How may I help you?
Yes, I want to report a stolen car.
I'll be able to assist you. Have you contacted the police?
The police are here right now.
Okay, once I have a location, I will contact the police, and I will contact you back.
Okay.
Make sure you're never without the valuable assistance of OnStar.
Police Department.
Yes, my name's Alicia. I'm calling from OnStar. Yes. I need to verify a stolen vehicle report. It's a 2003 Cadillac CTS.
Okay, I have that report right here.
I do have a location on that vehicle.
Great, that helps.
Okay, thank you.
OnStar is standard on all Cadillac vehicles. 51 GM models in all are available with OnStar. To learn more, visit OnStar.com.
Hello?
This is Alicia with OnStar. Your vehicle has been recovered.
Excellent. The OnStar really works on it.
Yes, sir.
Super. Alicia, you did a great job.
Okay, thank you.
OnStar. Always there. Always ready.
Lock us in on your first preset. AM 1150. KNRC. KNRC. The way Denver spells talk radio. KNRC. KNRC. You've been scanning the dials looking for a talk radio station that actually has more talk content than clutter. You found your locally owned and operated AM 1150 KNRC. Those out-of-town owners took away your talk radio. We are here to give it back. AM 1150 KNRC. More talk, less clutter.
Lionel, would you join me every weeknight from 9 to midnight here on AM 1150 KNRC? Now back to Enid Goldstein.
Yeah, if only we could go back to Enid Goldstein. It's the Enid Goldstein Show, but as we've said, Enid is not here today, and you're stuck with me, T.R. Reid, in her place. But you got to admit, this is a pretty useful program because we've solved your Father's Day giving problem. We are talking about a book that I think every father in the Rocky Mountain region would like to get for Father's Day, William Clark and the Shaping of the West by Landon Y. Jones, and we have Mr. Jones here to talk about it. If you have a view on this, either about the Lewis and Clark expedition or William Clark's later role in what was then called Indian removal, the removal of the Indian tribes from the east out to our part of the United States, give us a call at 1150 KNRC 303-382-1150. Give us a call and ask Mr. Jones about this, 303-382-1150. Landon Jones, you were telling us that in 19th century history books, Lewis and Clark barely got a mention. How about 21st century history books? What are the junior high and high school history books today say about these guys?
Well, they are a little more prominent. They become the books published after World War II have tended to focus somewhat more on Lewis and Clark. Although what happens now, it's interesting, they've become sort of a politically correct expedition. That is,
really?
Yeah, we emphasize the racial diversity. I mean, there was an African American on the expedition who, of course, was a slave, Clark's personal slave. I know, sort of good news and bad news.
Not a very good way to get diversity, I would say.
I know,
but,
and
yeah.
There was a woman, and you know, and certain things happened. I mean, Lewis and Clark, when they were puzzled over something, they often took a vote or a poll of the group, and so all of a sudden they become these sort of sensitive managers, you know, who are inclusive managers, and so you see our sort of 21st century biases,
yes,
that kind of coloring the way we've come to understand the expedition.
Yeah, that's classic. That's really fascinating that we've put our own gloss on what they were doing. I felt in your book after the expedition, I felt you did a very sensitive and effective job of trying to be fair to Clark's very early 19th century view of Indians as a problem and an enemy, and looking at it from a point of view today where we really don't want to feel that way. Did he feel any tension there, or was he pretty clear what the Indians were?
No, he felt great ambivalence about what was happening, and I think that was an anguishing part of his life, that he was put in charge of these Indian removals, and yet he could see what was happening, you know, and they were starving, their horses were being stolen from them,
mm-hmm.
you know, and what he did is that he reached into his own pocket often to help them and feed and clothe them and there's one very interesting story when he had come across a group of warriors and chiefs in St. Louis who were so poor. They were traveling to Washington, but they didn't have any money. So they would go out in the street and dance.
Uh-huh.
And basically, people would throw money at them, and that's how they were paying their way. And Clark was so offended by the idea of what he called the Indians, quote, dancing their way to Washington. You know, that should be a title of a book, Dancing
yeah,
Their
yeah,
Way
exactly.
to
Yeah, exactly. It's yeah.
That he reached into his own pocket, I mean, and not literally on the spot, but
yeah,
he basically
yeah.
paid. He paid all of their fares and, you know, to get them to Washington without this humiliating process of having to dance in the street to do it.
Yeah. So he did feel the ambiguity of what he was
about. Yeah, and he wrote a letter towards the end of Jefferson's life in 1826. Clark writes a letter earlier that year to Jefferson saying, you know, if only I was enabled to do more for the Indians. But the problem was he was a military man and he was a loyal military man, and he thought he couldn't do it on his own, that he had to have somebody order him to do it.
Yeah.
So he wanted to be enabled to do it. And I don't really know what Jefferson thought, because Jefferson got the letter, but then he was in his last illness and died 6 months later.
Yeah, yeah. And then he was working for President Madison, is that right? Or Quincy Adams?
Well, Clark worked for about the first seven American presidents.
Oh, really?
He basically knew and worked for every president from Washington to Van Buren.
Wow.
Clark had an amazingly long and interesting life. And when you think about it, TR, that he knew George Washington. Washington wrote letters about Clark. And then he also, at the end of his life, Clark was renting out a room in St. Louis to Robert E. Lee.
And so, really?
So the span of one lifetime, imagine that, you know, that he basically knows Washington as a very young person. And he knows Robert E. Lee, you know, he dies as the sort of embers of the Civil War are beginning to glow, and there's a sense of almost ominous and a darkening horizon when Clark is dying. He's renting out the room to Robert E. Lee. Jefferson Davis has captured an Indian chief named Black Hawk and brought him back to St. Louis in chains.
Really?
The Dred Scott, the famous Dred Scott of the Dred Scott case, is a slave working for one of Clark's Indian agents. And I'm sure Clark knew Dred Scott.
Jeez. Oh,
so it's just this sense of so much history sort of encapsulated in one life. But he also knew Daniel Boone. He also knew Mike Fink. He knew Jim Bridger. So
yeah, that's the amazing thing about reading your book. God, the names that pop up, you know, and I know I learned about those people. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so in those days, everyone sort of knew everyone else, and it was a remarkably small world in that sense.
But on the other hand, when he had to go back to Washington to see the president or the secretary of war, it took him forever.
Yes, well, travel was horrible. It wasn't until the steamboats were developed in the 1820s that you could do this, but for much of his life, they were, you know, 6 to 8 weeks or out of touch completely with anybody in Washington, and these were his bosses. And so he had a lot of unilateral authority to negotiate treaties and to kind of run the West. I mean, if you came from the East to the West and you wanted to go west of the Mississippi, Clark signed you a passport.
Really?
It was considered a foreign land because it was in Indian hands or in British hands or in Spanish hands, and Clark signed a passport to allow you to do it. And not even the president had this kind of power that he had.
You know, I have to say, as a bureau chief working for a bunch of bosses in Washington, I often think it would be better if it took 6 weeks for their orders to get out. I notice in your book that he, I think, wrote a letter or made a report in which he said the designated place for the Indians, I guess designated by Providence, is the land west of Missouri and Arkansas.
Yes.
And how far west does that mean? Was Missouri what we now mean as Missouri, or did it go further west?
No, at that time when Clark was in charge of Indian relations, Missouri stopped more or less where it does now.
Yeah, okay.
And the land further west, and what we would, you know, call, you know, Kansas and Colorado and, you know, Nebraska, was sort of an it was called unorganized Indian territory, and they would then started to organize that territory by assigning tribal reservations to it. But I remember when I was a little boy, my dad drove our family from St. Louis to Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
And we went through the town of Shawnee Mission, Kansas.
Yes.
And I remember thinking, you know, Shawnee Mission, the name of the Shawnee tribe was very familiar to me from, but really from the cowboy and Indian movies and that kind of hop-along casting stuff.
Yeah.
And I thought, how romantic. Here I am in this wonderful, you know, the homeland of this wonderful tribe. It wasn't until I was working on this book that I came to understand that the Shawnees were not from Kansas. The Shawnees were from Kentucky and Ohio. And they had been relocated there, and that's why there were Shawnees there. And I think that was sort of left out of the school books when people my age were kids. And I think even now, I don't think that American historians or American schooling has really dealt with what we did to the original inhabitants of this country, not only in the far west, but also in the east.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So my favorite Kansas Indian tribe would be the Potawatomi. They came from the east, too?
Oh, yeah. They were from Illinois.
Really?
And Clark dealt with them in Illinois. And they were among the last tribes to be relocated.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, the
really?
Potawatomi were from Illinois. The Kickapoo were from Illinois. I mean, they were
Sauk really?
And the Foxes from Illinois. They were wonderful tribes and great civilizations.
I think of them as Great Plains and Western tribes.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
And, then, of course, there were Plains tribes, too. They weren't so happy about having these Eastern tribes relocated without their okay, you know, in their midst. And so the conflict would result from that. And
yeah,
so
of course.
Clark was always trying to calm down the conflict between the tribes, you know, predictably.
Okay, so Mr. Jones, please stick around, and we'll talk a little bit more about that in your book, William Clark and the Shaping of the West, after we take a short break. It's T.R. Reid filling in for Enid Goldstein on AM 1150 KNRC.
Get your free AM 1150 KNRC coffee mug by going to our website, knrcradio.com, knrcradio.com, and then unlimited free refills at Sugar Beet Cafe with your mug. Just another way to say thanks for listening to AM 1150 KNRC.
Quest Choice Business. Your business line plus any five features for just $39.99 a month. Over 100,000 small businesses have already signed up for Quest Choice Business. Shouldn't you?
I went to turn off my computer last night, and a window came up asking if I was sure I wanted to shut down.
Am I sure? How can I be sure about anything when I'm trying to sell my house?
If you're looking to sell your house, Coldwell Banker Residential Brokerage can ease your mind. Our extensive online exposure means your home gets shown through award-winning local and national websites. Coldwell Banker Residential Brokerage. Visit ColoradoHomes.com. Coldwell Banker Residential Brokerage is owned and operated by NRT Incorporated.
Gum Out Fuel Injector Cleaner presents a list of cleaned up words you can use the next time another motorist cuts you off. Gee Willikers. Gee Whiz. Golly. Horses Patoot. Shucks. Shoot. Phooey. Balderdash. And Poppycock. Gum Out. If we can clean out harmful deposits in your fuel injectors and restore lost performance, we can clean up anything. Gum Out. Good clean driving.
Classical music followed by a late dinner.
Going to a funny play with drinks and dancing afterwards.
An art exhibit, gallery walk.
No, an outdoor arts festival.
Summer in Breckenridge is all about the arts. There's live music most nights at the Riverwalk event tent. Art galleries, festivals, free performances, theater, and workshops. Over 150 things to do and see. Breckenridge. Visit GoBreckNow.com today for competitive rates and tailored vacation. Have a cool summer experience in Breckenridge.
Supporting those involved in serving and protecting our country has never been more important. The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is to ensure our veterans receive the medical care and rehabilitation to which they're entitled, to provide programs that strengthen bodies and stimulate minds, to ensure access to housing, education, and transportation. To find out how you can support our nation's paralyzed veterans, call 1-866-USA-4PVA. That's 1-866-USA-4PVA.
Have toothache pain? Get Ambisol. Maximum strength Ambisol has the same strength pain reliever that dentists use. Dent is strong, so the pain is gone. Use only as directed.
The 2004 Chautauqua Summer Concert Series is here. Spend a memorable summer night in the historic setting of Chautauqua Auditorium in Boulder and hear great artists from around the world and across the musical spectrum. On Saturday, June 19th, see the legendary John Hiatt at Chautauqua. For complete lineup and tickets, visit chautauqua.com. The 2004 Chautauqua Summer Concert Series, brought to you by AM 1150 KNRC.
To the Enid Goldstein Show on AM 1150 KNRC. Here again, Enid Goldstein.
No, here again, not Enid Goldstein. It's the Enid Goldstein Show, but as you've heard, you're stuck with T.R. Reid filling in for Enid Goldstein today. And we're really having a really interesting conversation, I think, with the author and historian Landon Y. Jones, talking about his newly published book, in my view, The Perfect Father's Day Gift for 2004, William Clark and the Shaping of the West. We talk about Clark's experience, of course, on the Lewis and Clark expedition, but Mr. Jones' argument in the book, and I think he proves the case convincingly, is that Clark would be a bigger figure in American history if we didn't think of him as the Lewis and Clark expedition because of his role in the shaping of the West and what was then known as Indian removal, moving the Indians from the East and Midwestern states to our part of the country. Mr. Jones, the descriptions in your book are so vivid. I just love them. I keep coming back to this picture of clothing. Now, you said when they were sailing in these canoes down the Missouri River, they kind of wore military clothes. But you have a moment in your book late in Clark's life when he meets the future Chief Justice Salmon Chase. And Chase describes him kind of like a Davy Crockett figure with a fringe shirt and everything. Is that right?
Yes. When Clark was somewhat older, he was in his 60s at this point. He traveled back from St. Louis to Washington on the Ohio River on a steamboat. And he goes to Cincinnati and he meets his future young lawyer, but later a Chief Justice of the United States, Salmon Chase. And Chase was dumbfounded by the sight of Clark, and because he was physically an imposing fellow. He was a large man, red hair, blue eyes. And then he dressed in his very picturesque fashion with sort of buckskin shirt and buckskin clothing. And he would wear an officer's, a purple officer's sash tied around his waist. And Chase went home that night and wrote it all up. He was so amazed by the sight of this romantic frontiersman that he wrote it all up and described him. And then what was impressed people so much was that Clark was also very smart. That is, he looked like a bumpkin in one sense, like a frontiersman.
Yeah.
But he was not. He was deeply intelligent, and he knew natural history. He knew plants. He knew animals. He knew geography. He was a genius level cartographer, and so it was this amazing combination of a rough hewn frontiersman with high intelligence that really blew people away.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I also note that Salmon Chase, when he met Clark, couldn't quite figure out where St. Louis was.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, the West was a mysterious place to Easterners, and Chase was in Cincinnati, which itself wasn't, you know, exactly on the eastern coast.
Yeah,
but he had
he
no
seems
idea.
To think St. Louis was right at the foot of the Rocky Mountains is what he thought.
Yeah, that's right. He thought Clark lived somewhere near the Rockies.
Yeah, if only we could have gotten him out here, he'd know that we are the Queen City of the Plains at the base of the Rockies, right here in Denver, Colorado.
That's exactly right.
As I said earlier, I think the reporting, the research in this book, William Clark and the Shaping of the West, is really, it's amazing how much stuff you dug out. So tell us how you did it. Where did you have to go?
Well, I went to a lot of libraries where they have archival materials and letters. And so Missouri Historical Society in St. Louis, Newberry Library in Chicago, the Beinecke Library at Yale University, Princeton University Library, which has wonderful collections.
Really?
The New York City Public Library. I never got to Denver. I would like to have gone there. There's some good stuff there. And I also would like to have gone to the Huntington Library in California. And so they'll have to wait my next book when I figure out what it is.
Yeah, well, as I suggested earlier, let's see, you've done Lewis and Clark. You've done Clark. There are a bunch of biographies of Lewis out there already. So I think Sacagawea is your next hit.
Sacagawea would be good, but there are a lot of biographies of her out there, too.
Oh, I guess there are.
There are 10 biographies of the dog that went on the expedition.
Oh, really? What's his name?
Seaman.
Semen. Now,
yeah.
Why didn't I know that? Should I have known that? I mean, is he informed American?
No, yeah. But, I mean, people, he was in Newfoundland. He was a large, hungry dog, and he almost got eaten because they almost starved a couple of times, and they were eating their horses, but they never did eat semen. Just as well.
Well, you know, those of us who try to write serious books, we should know. I remember a guy once was trying to think of a way to crack the bestseller list, and he said, I think my next book will be Golfing for Hitler's Cat. And that's what, so maybe you ought to do the dog next. Anyway, I think you've earned a bestseller, Landon Y. Jones, with his terrific book, William Clark and the Shaping of the West. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you, T.R. I really enjoyed talking to you.
Good. Thank you. Is this T.R. Reid sitting in for Enid Goldstein on AM 1150 KNRC?
Hear Colorado talk. This is Colorado's locally owned and operated AM 1150 KNRC, Inglewood, Denver's premier talk station.
KNRC News Time, 1 o'clock.
NBC News Radio, I'm Bob Kerr at the White House. Washington, D.C., always a power center, but never more so than today, as world leaders gathered for Ronald Reagan's funeral. President Bush said Mr. Reagan was a symbol of America at its best.
We think of the steady stride, that tilt of the head and snap of the salute, the big screen smile, and the glint in his Irish eyes when a story came to mind.
Some 4,000 people attended the service at National Cathedral. Thousands more stood along the route as the late president's hearse passed by. American troops around the world are paying tribute as well. A ceremony was held aboard the aircraft carrier, the USS Ronald Reagan, anchored off the coast of Brazil. Funeral arrangements are being made for music legend Ray Charles. Producer Quincy Jones says Brother Ray, as he was known, transcended musical genres. Aretha Franklin calls him the voice of a lifetime. Bob Kerr, NBC News Radio.
Get the good stuff.
If you've got an engine with over 75,000 miles on it, here's something to think about. High mileage engines often perform differently. With increased oil consumption, lower fuel efficiency, and more rapid oil breakdown, Valvoline MaxLife motor oil helps offset the aging of critical engine parts and seals. This is the good stuff. And right now you can get Valvoline MaxLife motor oil for just $1.99 a quart. Price does not include state and local taxes and recycling fees.
Get the good stuff.
Napa. Get the good stuff.
Thinking about buying a used vehicle from a private owner? Think about this. Every Ford Quality Check certified pre-owned vehicle has to pass a rigorous 115-point inspection. The ones that do qualify come with 6 years, 75,000-mile powertrain, limited warranty coverage, and 24-hour roadside assistance. Think you'll get a 3.9% interest rate from a private owner? I don't think so. If we don't certify it, it's just used. Not all buyers will qualify for Ford credit financing. Take delivery from dealer stock by June 30th, 04. See dealer for warranty details or visit FordCPO.com.
Winner of 8 Associated Press Awards for Journalistic Excellence, including Best Newscast, award-winning news and entertaining talk. This is Denver's AM 1150 KNRC.
Good afternoon. Mostly sunny and 70 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin, KNRC News. Our storms earlier this week took a bigger bite than first thought. I'll have that story in a moment. First, let's check traffic. Here's Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
Northbound I-25 still a little on the heavy side from I-225 on up toward University Boulevard. Part of that is T-Rex construction, part of that is an accident, and part of that was a report of some debris in the lanes of traffic. Everything has been cleaned up now, so it's just going to take a few minutes for that to sort itself out. All of that is causing problems on the ramp from southbound I-225 to the northbound valley. That area is still jammed back to Parker Road. Bellevue and Yosemite, we have a large sinkhole in the street there. Could be 2:30 or so before things can be repaired. Good area to avoid there in Greenwood Village. Also an accident, Santa Fe and Alameda. One more coming in, northbound Peoria at I-70. Orkin Pest Control with the information. Just because you don't see carpenter ants doesn't mean they're not trying to turn your house into a sack of sawdust. Remember, if it bugs you, bug the Orkin Man at 1-800-ORKIN-MAN. Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
The Rocky Mountain Insurance Information Association says the damage from the storms on Tuesday and Wednesday is now up to about $100 million, higher than the original estimate of $7 million. State Farm Insurance figures they'll get about 10,000 auto claims, 7,500 homeowner claims. This report brought to you by Tyson Foods. The Adams County Sheriff's Office is reporting a deputy-involved shooting today. Sergeant Lewis Dixon says the incident took place late this morning at the Platte Valley Medical Center in Brighton and involved a suspect the deputy was transporting. The suspect has been airlifted to Denver Health in critical condition. The deputy was not hurt. Across America, church bells rang in honor of former President Ronald Reagan. At 11 this morning, the bells tolled 40 times at Denver's St. John's Cathedral. Here's Father Peter Eaton.
There's a great national outpouring of affection and respect, and it's appropriate that we here in Denver should have an opportunity to do the same thing.
The cathedral's doors are open all day for those who wish to pray, and a service is set for this afternoon at 5:30. St. John's is at 13th and Washington. In sports, the Colorado Rockies are in Florida for the weekend, playing a three-game series against the Tampa Bay Devil Rays. Aaron Cook climbs the hill for the Rocks this evening. Family meal tonight, look for Tyson fully cooked beef roasts, hickory smoked bacon, and chicken nuggets at your neighborhood grocer. Great tasting, high quality, look for Tyson products in the bright red packaging. We'll check your exclusive Weather Channel forecast up next. KNRC News Time is 104.
Info.
What's up?
The scoop. The latest.
What do you know?
What's new?
Listen and we'll tell you. Hear Colorado Talk. AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, I'm Judy Schwartz.
And I'm Evelinda Ehrman. We co-host Style Matters Live, and you know we shop every chance we get.
Yeah, but in your stiletto heels, you keep slowing me down. That's why we shop at Aspen Grove. You can park directly in front of your favorite stores and walk right in.
No more walking long distances back and forth from the stores carrying heavy shopping bags, something we've been known to do.
Or driving through the parking lot praying for a spot. Spend more time shopping at Aspen Grove in Littleton, a beautiful open-air shopping center with some of the best national specialty shops, many that are exclusive to Southeast Metro Denver, such as Gap Body and Coldwater Creek with its casual chic clothing.
Don't forget Pottery Barn and White House Black Market, the only one in Colorado.
And the great Aspen Grove restaurants. I love the buffalo at Ted's Montana Grill.
Aspen Grove at Santa Fe and Mineral in Littleton is open Mondays through Saturdays, 10 to 9, and Sundays, 11 to 6. 303-794-0640. That's 303-794-0640. Experience shopping in a whole new light. Sunshine.
I'm Stephanie DeLuca with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. A break from our wet and wild weather of late. We're going to see lots of sun out there for today. Going to be a little breezy, high of 80. Clear tonight down to 47, and for tomorrow partly cloudy with a high of 79. Sunday, isolated late afternoon storms, otherwise partly cloudy and a high of 85. For the Weather Channel, I'm Stephanie DeLuca on AM 1150 KNRC.
Mostly sunny and 70, KNRC News Time is 106. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 1:35 or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
From AM 1150 KNRC, Denver's choice for talk. Now, one of the Mile High City's most compelling talk hosts, Enid Goldstein. The producer is Joe Anderson. Board operations, Jordan Lyles. Now, here's Enid.
Hi, Colorado. On a beautiful June day, it's true that Enid Goldstein is one of the most compelling talk show hosts in Denver. Certainly the leading lunchtime talk show hosts in the Rocky Mountain region, I think. Unfortunately, we have a pretty uncompelling talk show host right now, T.R. Reid. I'm sitting in for Enid, and I can't even try to match her, and I won't. But if you'll give us a call about these topics and help me out, I think we can struggle through. The first hour today, I think we had a really interesting conversation with Landon Y. Jones, the author of the new biography of William Clark, of Lewis and Clark. And in the third hour, starting at 2 o'clock Mountain Time, we're going to have David Ethan Greenberg here in the studio with us. Does that mean anything to you? It should, because David Greenberg is the CEO of the New Schools Development Corporation, and he is starting the newest and I think arguably the most exciting new school in the Denver public school system, probably the most exciting new school in the state of Colorado. This is the Denver High School of Science and Technology. If you haven't heard about it, you ought to know about it. You're paying for it if you live in the city of Denver. You probably want your kids to go there. This is going to be a fantastic opportunity for smarter kids in our state. And so stick around, and we'll hear Dave Greenberg from 2 to 3. In the meantime, here's what we're going to talk about, and I'd really like to hear from you. Give us a call at 303-382-1150, 303-382-1150, because what we're going to talk about, this is the day that we buried Ronald Reagan, Ronald Wilson Reagan, a really outstanding and a leader of our country, a controversial but popular president, and a man who left a mark on the late 20th century in the United States of America and the world. We've heard these suggestions. It's natural when a president dies, even when Nixon, who in my view was a liar and a crook, I'm sorry if I'm offending anybody, but when he died, everybody was fairly kind to his memory. And, of course, people are remembering all the good stuff about Ronald Reagan, and there is a lot of good stuff about Ronald Reagan to remember. But I did see an interesting, you know, this suggestion that we put Reagan's face on a dime or we put Reagan on the $10 bill. Call me up and let me know what you think about that. I saw an interesting suggestion, rather than put Reagan on the $10 bill. That's small potatoes. That's not good enough for Reagan. We should put Reagan on the $1 trillion bill, because after all, this is a guy who added $1 trillion to our national debt in just 8 years. So let's put him on it. Let's make a $1 trillion bill if we can ever pay off the Reagan debt, and put him on that. $10 doesn't come anywhere near matching the kind of deficits that Reagan ran up, or at least this is a suggestion. What do you think? May I just say one more thing? There is a Reagan Federal Office Building in Washington, D.C. It's the ugliest building in Washington. I think it's really a tragic memorial to a pretty great guy, because this is such a big, ugly block of concrete that they named after him. We can do better than that. Or should we try to do better than that? Give us a call at 303-382-1150 and tell me what you think about putting Reagan on a bill or putting Reagan on a stamp. They've already agreed to put Reagan on a stamp, and that's fine by me. You have to be dead to have a stamp made after you, and he earned it. I don't have any problem with that. The $10 bill bugs me, and I think, as I say, it undermines his contribution to the deficit in this country. I heard this morning right here on 1150 KNRC, Bill O'Reilly was talking about Ronald Reagan's great contributions, and O'Reilly is a pretty honest guy, and he admitted that Reagan created massive deficits year after year while he was president. And then O'Reilly goes on to say, but no problem, because in the 1990s that deficit went away. Well, yes, this is true, but I wonder if you remember how that deficit went away. If you remember, give us a call at 303-382-1150. The reason the deficit went away that Reagan had created was because two presidents, first the elder Bush and then Clinton, reversed Reagan's policies. They both raised taxes. That eliminated the deficit by the end of the 90s. It took off the huge weight of the Reagan deficits on the economy and led to a boom in the 1990s that was broader and wider and more enriching than the boom created by Ronald Reagan himself. So I think I don't think we honor the memory of this great leader by trying to give him credit for stuff he had nothing to do with. I don't see how that honors him. Reagan did. He was an important leader. I mean, for many of you, this is ancient history. Some listeners weren't even born when this happened. But in 1980, when he was elected president, our country was badly divided and really uncertain. We didn't know what our role was in the world. We had a bunch of hostages in Iran that we didn't know how to get out. Interest rates were above 12%. You were paying 12, 14% for a mortgage, probably double the monthly payment of what you'd be paying today. Inflation was at 12%. It was really, our country was racked with problems. And Reagan came in with that sense of confidence of his and made us feel pretty good. And right from the beginning, people liked him. He was a likable guy, and people liked him. And I think that's important. I think it's valuable in our country, whether you agree with his policies or not, or her policies, that people like our president. I just want to tell you a quick story. I was covering the White House for the Washington Post early in the Reagan years. And there was a Reagan recession. This is a real term. Yes, I know we shouldn't say anything evil about the dead, but the fact is there was a Reagan recession. He brought it about with these high interest rates, and there were 12 million people out of work. And he was asked at a press conference, what are you going to do about the 12 million Americans out of work? And Reagan said in his classic way, he said, oh, you guys in the press, you make so much of this. Unemployment, I mean, you're always talking about it, but the simple fact is, if every company in the United States would just hire one more person, one more, we'd eliminate unemployment overnight. This is what Ronald Reagan said, the president of the United States. Well, I'm a reporter, right? So I go back to the newsroom, and and I say, I call the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and they say, well, it's either 12 million people unemployed, and there are 4 million companies. So even if every company did hire one person, we'd still have 8 million people out of work. In other words, he was wrong. But I did not write in the Washington Post, the man doesn't know what he's talking about. I just wrote, he said this, every company hire one person, and then I said there are 12 million unemployed and 4 million companies. And you know what happened? Hundreds of people called the Washington Post and say, lay off. Get off his case. You're always dumping on the guy. I didn't dump on him. I just gave some facts. But people really liked this president. They were behind him, and that was a great boon. Dave in Arvada. Dave, are you there? Did I get this right? There. No.
Yes, me. Hello.
Hi, Dave. How do you feel? What do you think on the day we've buried this president?
Well, I can barely hear you, but anyway, I was wondering what was so great about Reagan. I mean, at first I didn't like him at all.
Yeah. I thought that he was a terrible president, probably the worst we had, you know, about like Bush.
But what do you think he did wrong?
I was just wondering what was so great about him.
Well, you're old enough to have remembered when he was president?
Well, yeah, that was one thing, too, is that I was very young when he was president, so I was like, you know, around 19, 20 years old, not as much as in politics. But I remember, as I recall, him causing a recession, going after civil liberties like unbelievable. You know, he was a union buster, he screwed the veterans, he caused ran up the deficit. He was against civil liberties very strongly. He wanted a police state. So I can't stand the guy. I mean, I say good riddance. But I don't see anything great at all. So I was just curious what was so great. I must have missed something.
Well, I think you missed. There were problems with Reagan's presidency, and I myself have been mentioning this massive deficit he ran up that was only reversed when people turned his policies backwards. There were problems, but I think generally he's remembered by people as a president we liked who made us restored American confidence, made us feel pretty good to be Americans. He had that sunny outlook. It was always morning in America when Reagan was president, and that felt good. Now, do you think, would you call that the trait of a leader to make the country feel good about itself?
Well, I don't remember that. I mean, I remember it being horrible. I remember, as I said, him trying to turn into a police state and people constantly criticizing him, including myself, and talking about the fact that he was losing his mind, and they were all watching that. These are the things I remember. I remember every day being terrible because he was president, and everything he did just really disgusted me, just like Bush every time I get up. If I just look at him in the paper, I get sick if I see Bush's picture. So it wasn't mourning for me, and I know it wasn't mourning for probably a lot of people. So
Yeah, that's an interesting point. It's certainly true. We know this, that for a lot of people, just seeing George Bush on the George W. Bush on TV sends hackles up their spine. They just can't stand him.
Yeah, it's horrible.
And, Dave, you got to admit that there are a lot of people, when they see George W. Bush on TV, they feel great, and they say, boy, that's my president.
Yeah.
You know, Reagan, I think, for most of his presidency, maybe right at the beginning and certainly at the end after Iran-Contra, other than that, most of his presidency, he was not a divider. People liked him. People looked at him, and they said, I don't agree with the guy, but he's a leader. He's our president. And to me, that's an important skill for a leader. I think he's different from Bush in that regard.
Yeah, there must be something, appealing that I missed. And I just hope that people don't, start liking Bush as much as they liked him.
Dave, I appreciate your call, and I think a lot of people agree with you, but I want to teach you some Latin, if you don't mind. On the day we're burying Reagan, I'm going to teach a Latin phrase, de mortuis nil nisi bonum. De mortuis means about the dead. Nil is nothing except the good. Nil nisi bonum. Don't say anything but good stuff about the dead. Now, de vivendibus bonum atque malum. You can say good or bad about the living like George W. Bush, but maybe on the day we're burying the man, we ought to lay off. And tomorrow we can start remembering the bad things about Reagan. What do you think?
Sure, yeah. I won't say anything bad today.
Okay, that's a deal, Dave. Thanks for calling.
Thanks.
Donna and Aurora. Donna, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
I
just wanted to mention something that happened to me back in 1975. My father had a heart attack, and he lived in Iowa.
Yep.
And I was put on an emergency flight from Denver to Omaha, and they put me in the first class section. I sat down. I had been crying. I had lost an only son just 2 years before that in a construction accident.
Jeez.
So they put me in the first seat on the left side in the first class section.
Mm-hmm.
I looked beside me. There was a man in a dark suit, and I glanced around, and I saw all these men, dark suits, little pins on them. And someone looked like Ronald Reagan over by the window, back one row across the aisle.
Yes.
So I asked the man next to me who, if that was Ronald Reagan. He said, it certainly is, ma'am. And these are all Secret Service men. We've been a little bit concerned about you. I was just really, I could hardly speak. You know,
yeah.
I was kind of overcome with grief.
Yes.
Just the fact that Ronald Reagan was on the plane.
At this
something.
Time, Reagan was a public figure and
yes,
a politician, but not
right,
president.
Right, this was 1975, so he wasn't governor then or I don't think, and then he wasn't president yet until 81.
Yeah.
So I visited a little bit with the man next to me. He was very nice, and then I kind of settled down. And when the plane landed in Omaha, I said to the man next to me, I said, I'm going to just sit here and wait till all of you get off the plane. And so I sat still, but I could see Ronald Reagan getting up out of his seat, coming a little bit closer. I stood up, and I did shake hands with him.
Mm-hmm.
He handed me a note that was written on yellow legal paper.
Yes.
And the note said, I know a few words from a stranger can't be of much comfort at this time, but I do want to say them. And it went on and said that he believed that God had a plan for all of us, and we have to trust in his infinite wisdom.
What a real human being.
I know,
he was.
And signed Ronald Reagan. So I have very, very warm thoughts about him.
That's wonderful, Donna.
And the
thanks
story
so
was
much
in the Denver
sharing.
Post.
Yeah.
And I didn't put it in the paper until 5 years later. I called the Denver Post. My husband died in 1980, December, and he always wanted me to call the Post and get the story in the paper, and I didn't.
But
so
you
I waited
got it
until
in.
After my husband died.
Donna, thanks so much for sharing
nice,
that with
right,
us today.
Right, and it was in the Denver Post.
Great. That's
January
great. Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate it. What a real human being he was. We got to take a break now. It's T.R. Reid filling in for Enid Goldstein on AM 1150 KNRC.
Aren't you tired of all the clutter on the other talk stations?
Did you hear that?
Does it seem like they have any time to talk issues? The answer is no. Keep it here on Denver's premier talk station, AM 1150 KNRC. KNRC.
Hi, this is Doug Kellett, and allow me to introduce you to the number one public golf course in Colorado as rated by golfers and peers alike. Joining me now to talk about the Ridge at Castle Pines North is manager Daryl Fuston.
Thanks, Doug. You are right. The Ridge at Castle Pines North is consistently rated as the number one public course in Colorado. We have become the venue of choice for corporate and charity events. We are committed to providing the best golfing experience in Colorado.
It is a perfect place for corporate outings and for businessmen and women to choose to entertain their clients. When you want to take that prospective client or client to the perfect course, this is it.
And with our great restaurant, spectacular front range views, along with Troon Golf's Country Club for a Day philosophy, we are the perfect place to bring your clients and to set up corporate golf events.
And you know, we haven't even talked about the course. Once you've played the beautiful 18 holes at the Ridge at Castle Pines North, you are sure to come back. Set up a tee time or call for info about your corporate or charity event. 303-688-4301. That's 303-688-4301. The Ridge at Castle Pines, your country club for a day. Hi, this is Doug Kellett. Consider this your invitation to a special educational workshop that may help you grow that retirement income. Certified financial planner Willis Ashby of Integra Financial is hosting the workshop. Willis, tell us what you've got planned.
Doug, the workshop is so you can make informed decisions as to which investments best suit your needs, how you can adjust your portfolio to keep pace with inflation. I'll also be discussing how you can reduce your current financial risk and maintain the potential for competitive returns.
Now, that sounds good, and let me remind everyone the seminar is free, and this gives people a chance to meet you and see if having a financial advisor actually works for them, right?
Exactly, and it's in a comfortable environment where you can check us out. We'll also be discussing what a fee-based investment advisor is and how the tax laws and your investments interact with one another and how and where you should invest today for tomorrow.
Seating is limited, so you need to reserve your seats for the June 15th or June 17th workshop by calling 303-220-5525. That's 303-220-5525. Integra Financial, helping people make good financial decisions since 1989.
We are gathered here today to join this station and this listener in holy matrimony. Do you, the listener, take traffic and weather together through tie-ups and sudden showers for newscasts and financial information from talk show to talk show till power outage do you part?
I do.
I now pronounce you listener and listenee. You may now kiss the dial.
Ah, sheer wedded bliss. Hope you are enjoying the honeymoon as much as we are.
We plan for it to be a long one.
AM 1150, KNRC.
I'm Scott Cohn, CNBC Business Radio. Ronald Reagan's death has so far done nothing to change President Bush's stance on stem cell research. 93-year-old Mr. Reagan spent the last decade of his life battling Alzheimer's disease. Over the years, his wife Nancy has become more outspoken about the merits of using stem cells derived from human embryos to search for cures. The irony is, it's a position even her husband might well have opposed while he lived. As president, Ronald Reagan banned federal funding for any biomedical research using fetal tissue. Political conservatives tend to be against it because it requires destruction of human embryos only days old. Not much has changed at the White House. In 2001, President Bush signed an executive order limiting federal research funding. And First Lady Laura Bush recently said she can't support the research either, even though her own father died of Alzheimer's disease. More than 200 members of Congress have urged President Bush to lift the restrictions on stem cell research. Scott Cohn, CNBC Business Radio.
You told us you needed more traffic reports during the morning and afternoon commute, and we listened. AM 1150 KNRC now provides you traffic reports at least five times each hour during mornings and afternoons. After all, we are the third worst traffic city in America. AM 1150 KNRC. Listening to the Enid Goldstein Show on AM 1150 KNRC.
Ronnie himself certainly believed that he had been given back his life for a purpose. As he told a priest after his recovery, "Whatever time I've got left now belongs to the big fella upstairs."
Here again, Enid Goldstein.
Here again is not Enid Goldstein. It's the Enid Goldstein Show on KNRC, but you're stuck with T.R. Reid filling in for Enid this afternoon. We just heard what I think has to be the most stunning moment of the Reagan funeral this morning, a really imposing, majestic morning of television. And that was when Margaret Thatcher, a Brit of all people, talked about the big fella upstairs. I guarantee you, having just come home from living in London for 5 years, nobody in Britain has ever talked about the big fella upstairs unless they're making fun of Americans who talk that way. I bet you all of Britain is croaking to have heard their former prime minister talk about the big fella upstairs, but rather striking. What we're asking today, and we'd love to hear from you at 303-382-1150, is about the concept of the stature gap, whether the timing of President Reagan's demise and his state funeral in the middle of an election campaign is going to have some impact on George W. Bush. My newspaper, the Washington Post, had a column suggesting that there's a stature gap. People are going to remember Reagan, who was really a very popular, powerful leader of our country, and look at George W. Bush and the divisiveness, the feelings of love against the feelings of hate surrounding him, and wonder if maybe this suggests to people that we could do better. I'd like to hear what you have to say about it. I covered, so give us a call at 303-382-1150. We've already heard from listeners who thought Reagan was awful and from a listener who told us a lovely human story about Reagan trying to help her in a time when she needed it. It was quite touching, I think. I covered Ronald Reagan as a reporter for the Washington Post. I covered his 1980 campaign. And although I didn't frankly think too much of Jimmy Carter as a president, when Reagan started running against him, I thought it was a hopeless cause. On the first day that I was covering the Reagan campaign, I wrote in my diary, "The American people will never elect this washed-up B-movie actor to be president." And followed him around for 3 or 4 months on that campaign, and on election day, as we were flying out to California for Reagan to vote, I wrote in my diary, this guy would be a pretty good president. And I think in terms of leadership, leave aside his policies, in terms of leadership, in terms of making Americans feel like we all belong to the same place, I would say he was a pretty good president. Let's see what some of our listeners think. Mariel in Denver, let's see if I can find you. Mariel, did I get you?
You sure did.
Yeah, hi. So what'd you think this morning?
Well, I wanted to comment on... Sorry, I'm a little shaken up. This is my first time calling a radio station.
Oh, that's fine. You know, if Enid were here, she would kiss you, but I'm not going to do that. I'll save you. You wouldn't want to kiss me. But...
Oh, that...
All right, well, let's see. Can we find a kiss? Hang on a minute, Mariel.
Thank you.
You are. Now you don't have to be shaken.
Well, I'm 21, so yeah. I don't remember Reagan's presidency. I mean, maybe I was being a...
Oh, come on. You were two or three when he was...
...child. But I wanted to comment on how the right is reacting to the left's reaction to Reagan's death.
Yeah, that's a very interesting observation. What do you think?
I feel that, I mean, another radio talk show host on the same station has been commenting on the hijacking by the left of Reagan's death. And I think it's sort of interesting that John Kerry can be respectful to Reagan in his death, and still he's going to be attacked by the right.
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting point. I think Kerry has done just fine. He stopped campaigning for 5 days. He went out, he went past the coffin in a quiet way. Don't you think he handled it right?
I completely do. And another talk show host on this radio station said he hijacked Reagan's presidency by saying, "Oh, me too," like he's changing his mind.
Yeah, come on. He's just showing respect for the President of the United States. That's a legitimate thing to do, isn't it?
And I think that definitely that the right is going to take advantage of this, of Reagan's death, which I think is completely wrong.
Well,
and there is definitely a stature difference because Bush, I mean, whether or not you like his policies, is not an eloquent speaker.
Yes, that's right. And Reagan, whatever else he was a performer.
Yeah, I won't say a bad thing about him. I definitely don't stand with him on his policies, or I didn't stand with him on his policies, but eloquent speaker he was.
You know, I think the best biography of Reagan is written by a colleague of mine, a friend of mine, but it still is, by Lou Cannon, and the title of it is The Role of a Lifetime, suggesting that he was an actor every day he was president. I personally think this was true. I covered him in the White House, and he was really good at that role.
You know, I think that that's a role that most politicians have to play.
Yeah, yeah, and
whether you like it or not, if people always bash on Clinton, but, you know.
Yeah, he was a leader, too.
But, politician, do you have a whole lot of integrity? I'm not sure.
Well, then let me challenge you for a minute. So when our current president comes swaggering in with that proud stride of his and they're playing Hail to the Chief, do you not feel he's playing the role of national leader? What do you think?
Maybe a little bit. He plays the cowboy role a little bit too much. I'm not sure whether he actually is as, I don't want to say, unintelligent. I don't mean to disrespect him at all, because I do not want to disrespect any president.
Yeah.
But I think that maybe, I'm not sure if that is an act or not, but I'm inclined to say that it's not.
Yeah, I hear you. Okay.
So, I don't know.
Okay, Mariel, thank you so much. I think you earned your kiss. Thanks a lot for giving us a call.
Thank you very much, and I love your show. You're doing a great job, and don't bash on yourself. Don't be too hard
thank
on yourself.
You very much. Thanks.
Have a great day.
Let's hear from Bob in Fort Collins. Bob, did I get you?
Yes, you did.
Hi.
How you doing?
What do you think about this alleged stature gap?
I think that it's interesting. I think listening to your last caller saying that the right would politicize Bush's or Reagan's death in order to support Bush, I think the whole idea of bringing up a stature gap as a way to make Bush look less is a politicalization from the left.
Yes.
To try to make this work for you, for the left.
Absolutely, that's true. I think you're definitely right.
And if you want to, and since it's on the table, I just think if they are going to put the stature gap as a issue to be discussed, I think it ought to be discussed on both. I don't think either Kerry or Bush, both of them have a stature gap next to Ronald Reagan. And I think the stature gap that Kerry has next to Ronald Reagan is significantly greater than the one Bush has.
I hear you. Well,
and
let me
Then my other statement is,
yeah.
is you know, I guess that maybe some conservatives, is, you know, maybe on this other show, there's been a discussion about Kerry hijacking Reagan's presidency. I think that's funny because I don't think any Democrat or liberal is capable of hijacking Ronald Reagan's presidency. I don't think anybody can hijack Ronald Reagan's presidency. He did, I think he was a great deal more than just a great orator and a lovable guy like
I hear you.
For the past few minutes.
What would you say about Bill Clinton's stature vis-a-vis Ronald Reagan?
I think Bill Clinton, I am a conservative. I happen to agree with some of Bill Clinton's policies. I agree a lot with his belief in globalization, the global economy.
Yes.
I agreed with his stand on welfare and the reform of welfare.
Okay.
Two areas where I disagreed with him. I think that the fact that Bill Clinton would get a blowjob in the Oval Office.
Yeah.
Indicates to me that I wouldn't do that in my own office in Johnson & Johnson because I think that it is, not only is it not right to do, I don't think it's right to do.
I think we can all deplore that.
In company.
Yeah,
and the fact that he would do that, Ronald Reagan would never have done that. So I think he's got a character gap with Ronald Reagan, a significant character gap.
I hear you. Yeah.
And so that's how I kind of look at that. And I just, because of that, I think that Reagan's character that is making this, his death and his presidency, such a an amazing thing. And I think that because of that, I think that he struggles. Now,
Bob, thanks a lot. And could I just say to the callers waiting, please hang on. We'll be right back to you. But first, we're going to take a break and have the news with Tim McLaughlin on 1150 KNRC.
Award-winning news and entertaining talk. This is AM 1150 KNRC.
Good afternoon. Mostly sunny, 72 degrees. An officer involved shooting at a hospital today. I'll have that story in a moment. First, let's check traffic. Here's Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
Still a pretty keen driver on the freeway system right now. A little bit of slowing north and southbound I-25 through T-Rex, but nothing too unusual about that. Wind starting to pick up, particularly on the west side of town, so use caution, especially in high-profile vehicles. Medical emergency, 38th and Federal in West Denver. Accident in Central Denver, 23rd and Emerson. Accident East Denver, northbound Peoria at I-70. Also a big sinkhole causing problems at the intersection of Yosemite and Bellevue. Could be another hour or so before everything can be repaired. Detours are in place. They are Quebec, Orchard Road, and Dayton Street. Bank One with the information. What's maximum strength about maximum strength checking? Free one checking with direct deposit, online bill pay, email alerts. 4,500 ATMs only at Bank One. Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
A deputy from the Adams County Sheriff's Office shot a suspect at the Platte Valley Medical Center in Brighton today. The deputy was transporting the suspect who had been brought to the hospital for treatment. The suspect has been airlifted to a Denver hospital in critical condition. This report brought to you by CDOT WorkZone. Nathan Maxey, a former recruiting assistant at the University of Colorado, is appearing today before the grand jury investigating the CU football program. Maxey has admitted using a university-issued cell phone to call an escort service, but he denies hooking up strippers with CU players or recruits for sex. The Denver DA has formally charged a man accused of wandering around a Denver neighborhood setting cars on fire. 20-year-old David Dinsmore has been charged with 5 counts of second-degree arson and 7 counts of first-degree criminal trespass, both felonies, along with 1 misdemeanor count of theft. Sure, you might be a good driver, but not everyone out there is, so when driving through a CDOT work zone, pay attention to, for those who aren't, please slow for the cone zone. We'll take a look at the KNRC weather forecast next. KNRC News Time is 1:38.
We know you're busy running your lives. That's why we'll keep up with what the government is trying to do to you.
What's going on here?
Denver's new generation of talk radio. AM 1150, KNRC.
Americana music comes to the Arvada Center this Saturday night, complete with bluegrass, jazz, honky tonk, and western swing, when Pete Wernick's Live 5 and Haldon Wofford and the High Beams perform in the Arvada Center's beautiful outdoor amphitheater this Saturday, June 12th at 7:30 p.m. Pete Wernick's Live 5 will play what they like to call Flexigrass, a unique fusion of supercharged bluegrass and traditional jazz. Local favorites Haldon Wofford and the High Beams will open for the Live 5 with their high-energy, real country music sound. Tickets for Pete Wernick's Live 5 with Haldon Wofford and the High Beams are $20 for covered seating and $10 for lawn seating. For more information or to purchase tickets, contact the Arvada Center box office at 720-898-7200 or visit their website at www.arvadacenter.com. Don't miss Pete Wernick's Live 5 unique flexigrass sound and the real country music of Haldon Wofford and the High Beams this Saturday night at the Arvada Center. Call 720-898-7200.
Checking the KNRC weather forecast, mostly sunny and breezy through the afternoon. We'll see clear skies tonight, and we'll cool off to the mid to the upper 40s. For tomorrow, partly cloudy with a high in the upper 70s. Mostly sunny and 72 now. KNRC News Time is 1:39. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 2 o'clock or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, I'm Evelinda Ehrman.
And I'm Judy Schwartz. We co-host Style Matters Live.
Even if you're not born with great style, you can buy it.
Just like we do. And this extends to our homes. Element, Denver's newest furniture store for urban home furnishings, accessories, and artwork, meets all our style needs and will meet yours, too.
Element has multifunctional furniture to maximize your space in a condo, apartment, loft, or smaller home. The clean lines of Element's furniture for today's urban lifestyle will work with what you already own.
You'll love their eclectic mix of styles, all presented in a way you can envision in your own home.
Prices are affordable, with lamps as low as $100 and sofas starting at about $1,000. Interior design services are available.
Element is open Monday through Friday, 11 to 6, Saturday, 10 to 7, and Sunday, 1 to 5. Element is located at 77 West 9th Avenue, a half a block west of Broadway in the Golden Triangle. 303-825-3770.
Element. Your lifestyle, your home, your element.
Your summer passport for news and information. Identification, please.
Where talk happens. AM 1150 KNRC.
Enjoy your summer.
Hi, I'm Doug Kelly. Join me weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 here on AM 1150 KNRC. Now back to Enid Goldstein.
Hi, Colorado. It's not Enid Goldstein, but as the tones of John Philip Sousa's Washington Post March must tell you, it's T.R. Reid of the Washington Post filling in for Enid and delighted to hear that great company song. This is a glorious day across the Rocky Mountains, but it's also the day that our country is burying our 40th president, Ronald Wilson Reagan. And we've been talking about this suggestion, hotly debated, I must say, among the callers, as to whether the memories of Reagan as president suggest there's a stature gap between former President Reagan and our current president, George W. Bush. Kelly has been waiting quite a while. Kelly, I'm so sorry I kept you waiting. How do you feel on this issue?
Well, you know, I really think he was a very great man, a very great president, and, you know, the caller earlier that was pretty much down on him, I have a lot of disagreement. I mean, he said he was probably in his teens or so. I was in my early 20s when Reagan came in, and I was in the military, and I'm retired.
Yes.
And I could truthfully tell you that the military and government that Reagan took on, but if 9/11 had happened in 80, we would still be, you know, building the boats to go there.
Yes, I hear what you're saying.
It was terrible.
Yeah,
I was at a place that had over 70 fighter aircraft, and you were lucky if you could get 12 in the air a day because of parts.
Well, of course, you remember Jimmy Carter launched that raid to get our hostages out of Iran, and it failed.
Right. I mean, it was demoralizing to be in the military post-Vietnam and everything, and Reagan brought back to the American fighting man that energy it took to become the people that we see on TV every night.
Yeah, and that's really interesting. And wouldn't you say kind of build up the morale of the whole country?
He did. I think he was a great morale builder to the country, but especially those people that, you know, that were in government that had a job to get done and didn't have any means to get things done.
Well, I think that would be true for the military. I think if you were a civilian in the government, I mean, this is a man who said government isn't the solution, it's the problem. I think that would have been demoralizing for those people. What do you think?
Well, you know, I tend to agree with him. I do. I mean, it's like the, you know, parts of government. Have you ever seen a sign that says rail work ahead? Have you ever seen a truck and a guy fixing the rail that goes around a mountain?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, that's government.
Don't get me started here. You drove to work this morning. Somebody built that highway, and you probably didn't pave it yourself.
This is true, but I'll bet you it was nobody in government. I'll bet it was Bill and Bob's Asphalt Company, but it was a contractor.
Well, they hired him, but it wouldn't be there if the government hadn't put it there. And frankly, your house would have been robbed or burned down by now if there weren't a government to protect. Anyway, we don't have to get into that.
Right.
How do you feel about the stature of our current president vis-a-vis Reagan?
Well, I think that Mr. Bush has done a great deal in trying to model himself after Reagan. Mm-hmm. I know he wants the outcome Reagan had.
Sure does, yeah.
And I think I think on a just a person level that he shares a great deal of the same values, politics, some policies, and some things that way. Well,
they've both broken the record for running up deficits.
He has the ability to bring it together.
Yep.
But it isn't for lack of want, and it isn't for true desire. And I think that he, you know, time will tell. You know, every you know, he.
On the other hand, you know, there's clearly a difference because 6 months before he ran for re-election, Ronald Reagan was the toast of the country, went on to win 49 states, was never even close. 6 months before our 2004 election, Bush looks like he's trailing.
Well, it all depends who you talk to.
Yeah, yeah.
The thing in Iraq is the problem that Iran-Contra was.
Yeah.
He proved to be the Teflon president that from here in Colorado claimed to be. It just slid right off.
Yeah.
Bush, on the other hand, I think he's tends to be a little bit more Velcro.
Yeah, he does. I think that's a very good observation. Kelly, thanks for your call.
All right.
Talk to you again.
Thank you.
Bye. Yeah. Let's talk to Liz. Hi, Liz.
Hi, TR.
So you've been paying attention to the funeral of our 40th president?
Oh, no. I cannot deal with this anymore. I promised myself I would not call anyone. But you know what? I can't take it anymore. Everybody talks about how wonderful this guy was as a human.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know what? He did a lot of awful stuff himself. I mean, you have things like QAC, giving up names. You have things like...
You're talking about, I think this is absolutely right, when he was an actor and the head of the Actors Union, he went to the Un-American Activities Committee and named names of fellow actors he thought were communists.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's not an admirable
thing. No, and you know, I mean, ruining people's lives on just, you know, an Orwellian thought is not a good thing.
Yeah, that's
and,
not
you
admirable.
Know, sending away your kid and never seeing them, cutting all mental health, you know, I mean, the list goes on.
It's a striking thing.
On.
He was a great family values guy. He was the first president we ever had who was divorced. And I was covering him in the White House one day when a three-year-old child came in. Turns out to be one of Ronald Reagan's grandchildren. It's the first time he met him when the boy was 3 years old.
And see, and this is my point. Is
these
that,
are family
you know what?
Values?
Don't make him out to be this perfect person
yes.
when he wasn't. I mean, not in the least. And, I mean, I'll give you this. He was a great figurehead. But as far as cutting programs, the way he treated his family, I heard somebody in the grocery store today say, well, Patty and Ron just didn't seem very upset. And it's like, well, I'm sure you didn't grow up in their household and don't know what they know.
Yes, I think that's right. But let me ask you this, Liz.
Don't
you feel that at a time when our country was kind of shattered and uncertain about its role, that he did revive confidence in America and make us feel good.
You know
would
what?
You give him
he
that?
He revived it, but almost to the point where it was selfishness, because remember, the 80s were the me generation. And it to me, it got more selfish. And yes, I voted during that time.
Yeah.
And it's like, it just got more selfish and more selfish, and we lost our sense of community.
Well, of course, if you remember Reagan's famous question in his debate with Jimmy Carter when he said, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? I would have liked to hear that question be, are we better off than we were 4 years
well,
ago?
Well, you know, as horrible as everybody says the Jimmy Carter years were,
yes, yeah.
We had a blast waiting in lines for gas. Honestly, we had, you know, you had wonderful conversations with other people. Yeah, it was a pain. But you know what? You dealt with it, you know, but...
I'd rather have my conversation somewhere other than a gas line.
Well, especially in the summer when you're waiting in line for 3 hours in the 90-degree heat.
Yeah.
But, I was all for Clinton in the beginning. I think he raised a lot of hopes.
Yeah.
But I thought Clinton was a sellout myself.
Oh, he
I could care
too far
less about
the center for you. Is that what you're
well,
saying?
Well, he went way too center. He got way too moderate, and I mean, I think that he had that kind of ray of hope again, and he sold out. I mean, I could care less about the sex. I mean, get on
with
it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but and Bush. Oh. I love it when people say, well, Clinton lied. Well, yeah, because Bush has never done that.
How do you feel about the relative stature of President Ronald Reagan and President George W. Bush? Who ranks higher?
Oh,
that's a tough one for you.
I really have to answer that?
Yeah, I want to hear.
Could I pick another president?
You could, but we're coming up to a break. Liz, thanks very much for calling.
Thank you, TR.
And we'll talk to you again. This is TR Reid sitting in for Enid Goldstein on AM 1150 KNRC.
He's looking out for you.
Listen.
Bill O'Reilly, weekdays at 10 a.m., exclusively with the Radio Factor on AM 1150 KNRC.
Family meal tonight. Look for Tyson fully cooked beef roast, hickory smoked bacon, and chicken nuggets at your neighborhood grocer. Great tasting, high quality. Look for Tyson products in the bright red packaging.
One enchanted evening, live by request. Audi presents Katie Lang, live in concert with the Live Symphony Orchestra. Katie Lang, this Saturday at Universal Lending Pavilion, located on the grounds of the Pepsi Center complex. Bask in the beauty of her incomparable voice. Tickets are on sale now at all Ticketmaster ticket centers and at the Pepsi Center box office. To charge by phone, call 303-830-TIXX or get tickets at cc.com or universallendingpavilion.com. Indulge yourself in an evening with K.D. Lang. K.D. Lang, presented by Audi, Clear Channel Entertainment, and Cronky Sports Enterprises.
Last year, terror came to a rural Arkansas town. This summer, any town is fair game.
America, here we come.
Paris Hilton and Nicole Richie are taking over America.
We don't know how to read them out.
I thought New Mexico was in Mexico.
One small town at a time.
Is this a real trailer park?
Yes.
And they'll have to earn their pay.
Have you ever whacked someone's back before?
No.
The Simple Life 2 Road Trip, premiering this Wednesday at 8, 7 Central on Fox.
Hi, it's John Rizzi, editor of Colorado Avid Golfer magazine. Do you love golf as much as I do? If so, join me and physical golf's Neil Walkadoff for On the Tee every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. on 1150 KNRC. We'll talk about how to play, where to play, and what to play. We'll go inside the tour, across the state, and around the country, bringing in guests from the world of golf. And we'll take your calls, too, even give you a shot at winning something. So join our twosome every Saturday morning at 8 on the Tee at 1150 KNRC.
Call 1-888-MY-BILLS now, and a debt counselor will help consolidate your bills into one affordable monthly payment. Call 1-888-MY-BILLS or go to mybills.org.
We call it dry talking. Go to our website at knrcradio.com and look for details on how you can get a free KNRC travel coffee mug. That'll help on those morning commutes, and it may stop those stupid hot coffee spill lawsuits. There are few things that are free these days, but you'll find them at knrcradio.com. Go there, sign up, and the dry talking coffee mug will be yours. You can even get unlimited coffee refills in your fabulous new KNRC coffee mug at Sugar Beet Cafe. It's just another way for us to say thank you for making AM 1150 KNRC your number one choice for news and talk in Denver. AM 1150 KNRC. You're listening to the Enid Goldstein Show on AM 1150 KNRC.
I, Donald L. Cacheri, Governor of the State of Rhode Island and Providence Plantations, do hereby proclaim June 11, 2004, as a day of remembrance for Ronald Reagan.
Hi, Denver. It's T.R. Reid sitting in for Enid Goldstein, and I think it's true that as Rhode Island goes, so goes the nation. I think everybody in America is remembering our 40th president today on the day we bury Ronald Wilson Reagan. I've surprising diversity from the callers. Give us a call at 303-382-1150 and tell us what you think about it. Have they been paying too much attention to Reagan? Have we ignored the bad stuff? You know this Latin expression I was talking about earlier, de mortuis nil nisi bonum. Don't say anything but good stuff about the dead, and maybe that would be a good rule on the day we bury the man, but I must say that hasn't been the rule for the callers. Call us and tell us what you thought about him at 303-382-1150. I happen to be covering the White House for the Washington Post on Ronald Reagan's last day as president, January 19th of 1989, just before Bush took over. And I just want to tell you, this was so marvelous. He was giving a speech saying goodbye to the White House staff. To me, this is classic Reagan. And here's what he said. He said, you know, yeah, starting tomorrow, I start my retirement. I've looked forward to it for a long time. I think retirement's going to be pretty nice. So I think I'll probably roll out of bed about 10 in the morning, maybe glance through the sports pages, have a late breakfast, maybe watch a little TV, and then after lunch I'll take a nap. You know, on second thought, it won't be that much different, he said. Now, you got to really like a man who could make fun of himself like that in the Oval Office. You had to admire him, whatever you think of his policies. But what did you think of Reagan, and what did you think of his policies? How did he stand up to other presidents in history? Desmond in Aurora is calling us. Desmond, what do you think?
I think he's a bad president because he ignored the AIDS crisis.
What was the state of the AIDS crisis in the 80s? What did we know about it?
Well, we know that like men were pretty much dropping like flies up in like New York and San Francisco.
Yes.
And like if you look at transcripts from, like, his press secretary, he was, like, laughing at the whole thing and everything, because I've seen transcripts from those things. And, like, when SARS erupted, it was, like, a national sort of emergency type thing. We took care of that. But when you look at the AIDS crisis, he didn't do anything.
That's a really interesting distinction. I haven't thought about that before. Well, you know, there was this view, and certainly among the Christian right followers of Ronald Reagan in the 80s, that AIDS was sort of this divine punishment on gays for being gay. Do you remember that view?
Well, I wasn't alive then.
There was that view. I wonder if Reagan... It's hard. Reagan was basically a fair-minded person. It's hard to imagine he shared that view. But you're arguing he didn't care enough and do enough about the AIDS crisis in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
You think if we jumped on it then, we wouldn't have this global crisis now?
I think that he could have done more about it, and that if he had done more about it then, we would have been more advanced today with it.
I hear what you're saying, yeah. Yeah, it's quite possibly true. Desmond, we're running out of time here. Thanks so much for calling. Really appreciate it. Whit in Denver, what do you think?
Well, that kind of the last caller made an interesting assertion, but he neglects that Ronald Reagan, during Reagan's tenure, over $6 billion was spent towards AIDS, AIDS research and trying to prevent AIDS. He wasn't a gay advocate as such, but he certainly understood it as a as a health crisis, and that's
I hear you. Yeah,
is a terrible, terribly inaccurate characterization of Reagan. He was an extremely compassionate man, but I'm taking issue with one of your callers that called probably about 20 minutes ago.
Yes,
when she and you agreed with her that he was simply an actor, the role of a lifetime caricature.
I think he was an actor every day and was a good actor at being president.
Well, but,
what do you think?
But you neglect the depths of the man's writing. The man was he wrote constantly, whether it was letters or keeping a diary.
Yeah.
He was a very, very well written individual. He wrote down his thoughts. He wasn't simply just reading speeches, as many people imply, that he was a good deliverer of speeches that other people wrote. He had profound influence over the content of
policy,
of his speeches.
Yeah.
When
Iran-Contra came along, he said he didn't even know what was going on. We were selling weapons to Mideast terrorists, and he said he wasn't even aware of it. What do you make of that?
Well, he can't have control of every aspect of his administration.
Yeah, I'm going to...
I think that's a fair comment,
but I think it's a cop-out when
Carter
it comes to selling to it.
He accomplished absolutely nothing.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You know, Jimmy Carter was a micromanager. He could tell you who was on the tennis court at 10 a.m., but he couldn't make a moral decision as to the immorality of the Soviet Union.
I hear you on that, but I think selling weapons to terrorists in the Mideast, that's a little bigger issue than micromanagement. Don't you think the president should have known?
We're talking about, that's like... to give you an example, you're familiar with EPO as a performance enhancement drug?
Yeah, but unfortunately I don't have time for it. Thanks so much for calling, but we're out of time. Next hour we're going to have Dane Greenberg of the Denver High School for Science and Technology on KNRC AM 1150.
Hear Colorado talk. This is Colorado's locally owned and operated AM 1150 KNRC, Inglewood, Denver's premier talk station.
KNRC News Time, 2:00.
I'm Lisa Myers in Washington. This is a city both in mourning and in celebration, mourning the death of Ronald Reagan, but celebrating his life. Leaders from around the world gathered at the National Cathedral for a funeral service. Former British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher was there, but was too frail to speak, so she praised her old friend on videotape.
Ronald Reagan knew his own mind. He had firm principles, and I believe right ones. He expounded them clearly. He acted upon them decisively.
Mr. Reagan's body is now being flown back to California for a sunset burial. Tomorrow in your area, look for an Alex's Lemonade Stand. An 8-year-old Pennsylvania girl, Alexandra Scott, is organizing lemonade sales in all 50 states to raise money for cancer research. She herself is battling the disease. I'm Lisa Myers, NBC News Radio.
Right now would be a good time to come to Napa Auto Parts, because now you can get a 71-piece gear ratchet professional tool set for only $49.99. This ultra-compact pass-through socket system virtually eliminates the need for deep sockets, making it one of the most versatile socket sets you can buy. This is the good stuff. Remember, Father's Day is right around the corner, and with gear ratchet sets going for $49.99, now is a great time to pick one up. Napa, get the good stuff.
Thinking about buying a used vehicle from a private owner? Think about this. Every Lincoln & Mercury certified pre-owned vehicle has to pass a rigorous inspection of up to 141 points. The ones that do qualify come with 6 years, 75,000-mile limited warranty coverage and 24-hour roadside assistance. Think you'll get a 3.9% interest rate from a private owner? I don't think so. If we don't certify it, it's just used. Not all buyers will qualify for Ford credit financing. Take delivery from dealer stock by June 30th, 04. See dealer for warranty details or visit FordCPO.com.
Winner of 8 Associated Press Awards for Journalistic Excellence, including Best Newscast. Award-winning news and entertaining talk. This is Denver's AM 1150 KNRC.
Good afternoon. Mostly sunny, 73 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin, KNRC News. An Adams County Sheriff's deputy was involved in a shooting today. I'll have that story in a moment. First, let's check traffic. Here's Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
Just getting a word of an accident downtown at 16th and Broadway. Doesn't sound like anyone is injured in that one. 35th and Columbine in central Denver. A lot of police activity in there. A police officer took out after somebody in a chase. Then he asked for an ambulance and some more police cars in there. So good area to stay away from. Freeway traffic by and large moving along in fairly good shape. Church Ranch and Wadsworth way up north. Accident, nobody hurt, but the fire department is on the scene trying to help someone get out of one of the cars. And at Bowles and Coal Mine, we have an injury accident. Those two streets actually cross north of Dakota Ridge High School in South Jeffco. John Elway Showrooms with the information. You get a certified used vehicle with a 99-day warranty. And at their gigantic used car tent event, get the lowest prices in town on every used vehicle through Saturday. Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
A deputy from the Adams County Sheriff's Office was involved in a shooting at the Platte Valley Medical Center about 9 this morning. The 33-year-old male suspect had been arrested hours earlier on warrants for aggravated robbery and escape. He complained of pains in his shoulder, was taken to Platte Valley. Sergeant Lewis Dixon explains what happens next.
While the inmate was being prepared for x-ray, he again tried to escape. At that time, the male was shot one time and is in critical condition at St. Anthony Central Hospital.
Dixon says the shooting was confined to a small area of the hospital, putting no one else at risk. This report brought to you by Vista Ridge. Former CU recruiting assistant Nathan Maxey is expected to testify today before the grand jury investigating the University of Colorado football program. He's admitted using a university-issued cell phone to call an escort service. Three women say Maxey shelled out over $2,000 to hire women for young men at a Broomfield hotel, which has housed football recruits. Maxey denies hooking up strippers with CU players or recruits for sex. The State Health Department today confirmed Colorado's first two reported human cases of West Nile virus for 2004. A 35-year-old Adams County woman and a 30-year-old Pueblo County man both became ill from the virus, although neither required hospitalization. Both are recovering. In sports, the Colorado Rockies take on the Tampa Bay Devil Rays tonight as they start a three-game series in Florida. Aaron Cook gets the start for the Rocks. Vista Ridge, a new community with championship golf, tennis, swimming, everything for you and your family, just 20 minutes north of downtown Denver, on the web at VistaRidge.net. Your exclusive Weather Channel forecast is next. KNRC News Time is 2:04.
Where will we send Justin next?
What's going on here?
Find out by keeping your radio locked in at AM 1150 KNRC. KNRC.
Come out to Old Town Arvada on June 12th and 13th for the second annual Arvada Gold Strike Festival, a fun-filled celebration of Colorado's rich mining heritage. Listen to great live music, taste local cuisine, and enjoy a plethora of outdoor activities suitable for the entire family. Lose yourself for the weekend in historic Old Town Arvada, the site of the first documented gold find in the state of Colorado. On Saturday, Easy Bill and the Big Beat and Eddie Clendenning and the Blue Ribbon Boys will be featured. Saturday will culminate with a headline appearance by Dot Cero. For Sunday, come out for the unique sound of Runaway Express, which will include a special appearance by John McEwen, and end your weekend with another unforgettable performance by Hazel Miller. Stick around to check out all the fun activities, such as a recumbent bike rally and a classic car show. So mark your calendar for June 12th and 13th. Be in historic Old Town Arvada, located 1 mile north of I-70, just one block west of Wadsworth. For more information, visit historicarvada.org.
Stephanie DeLuca with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. A sunny, dry, and breezy day. Our high, 80. Clear tonight, down to 47. Tomorrow and Sunday, partly cloudy, 79. Tomorrow, Sunday, some isolated late afternoon thunderstorms as well, with a high of 85. For the Weather Channel, I'm Stephanie DeLuca on AM 1150 KNRC.
Mostly sunny and 73. KNRC News Time is 2:06. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 2:35 or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
From AM 1150 KNRC, Denver's choice for talk. Now, one of the Mile High City's most compelling talk hosts, Enid Goldstein. The producer is Joe Anderson. Board operations, Jordan Lyles. Now, here's Enid.
Hi, Colorado, on a glorious June day. It is the Enid Goldstein Show, and Enid Goldstein is the most compelling noontime talk show host in Denver. So good that nobody could replace her. And we're proving that today because they got an absolute nobody to replace her. That would be me, T.R. Reed. I'm a local reporter. A total klutz at being a talk show host. But the one thing I do have is good guests. And this hour, we're going to have a really interesting conversation about Denver's newest high school, probably the most exciting new school in our state, maybe in the region, Colorado's high-tech high school, the Denver School of Science and Technology. Have you heard of this? If you have a brilliant kid and think your kid ought to be headed that way, give us a call at 303-382-1150. We're lucky today to be talking to David Greenberg, the CEO and the founder of the Denver School of Science and Technology. So, Dave, this school falls into a category of choice schools or something, is that correct?
Yeah, hi, TR.
Hi.
It's a charter school.
What does that mean?
A charter school is a public school with an independent board. So if you think about it, a normal Denver public school is run by the school board, and then it has a principal, and the principal essentially does what the school board tells him to do.
Okay.
And our school has an independent board, and we get the same amount of money per kid as any kid going to a high school at DPS, but our board runs the school.
You can, so you don't have to do the stuff that the Denver Public School Board does at every other high school.
Right. We have waivers on just about anything, so we can run the school exactly the way we want it.
And who is your faculty? Are they from the DPS or?
Well, they can be, but we recruited faculty from around the country. And so we have some pretty interesting people.
You have a principal?
We have a head of school. And the difference between a head of school and a principal is that the head of school actually has a budget. And actually runs the school.
Oh, I see. So it has a. It feels like it has a lot of aspects of a private school.
Yeah, it is. It's basically a private school in a public setting.
Where did it come from? Whose idea was it?
It actually came from a conversation between Bill Gates and Bill Owens. And
well, that's not bad.
Yeah, it's a good start.
Big money, big power.
And Bill Owens met with Bill Gates to invite him to be the first keynote speaker at the Colorado Technology Conference. And he also went there with the idea of hitting up Bill Gates for some money for the Colorado Institute of Technology. And Bill Gates said, well, we don't fund higher education. And the governor, being an enterprising fellow, said, well, what do you fund? And Bill Gates said, we fund K-12 public education reform with a particular focus on high schools. So the governor said, okay, give me some money for that. And Gates said, I want you to take a look at some schools in California that are doing some really interesting things. And if Colorado wants to try to do something like that, then we'll give you startup funding.
When did this happen?
This was late 2000.
And I think obviously the result of the story is they did get some money from Bill Gates.
Yeah, we got a startup grant, which was basically enough money to get us into trouble. The Gates Foundation doesn't do is fund capital construction. In other words, they'll give you money for sort of designing the program for the school, but they won't give you money for actually building the school. And this ended up being a $15 million challenge.
And how'd you get into it, Dave Greenberg?
I was for 10 years a commissioner of higher education in Colorado. And Mark Holtzman, who was the Secretary of Technology under Bill Owens, asked me to head the effort, and the two of us flew out to visit one of the schools that Bill Gates had talked about called High Tech High in San Diego. And I was so knocked out by it that I said I would do it.
That's fantastic. Okay, so then you come back and you're at the drawing board. When did you start up?
April of 2001.
And would you have said then that you could have a school going by September 2004? Was this an impossible dream?
Well, actually, we thought we were going to get it done earlier, but the stock market crashed.
And what difference does that make?
Because a lot of the corporations and foundations that would invest in a science and technology school went bankrupt. So we would go around soliciting money, and we'd have guys, you know, telling us very sadly that they had three Learjets and they're down to their last one.
Yeah, I feel for those guys, too. That slowed fundraising.
Yeah, and actually it got worse because the day we were going to launch our fundraising was 3 days after 9/11.
Oh, yeah.
So we lost about a year.
Yeah, I can see this. Yeah, yeah. And now, let's just skip right ahead to the present. Now you're ready to go. You have a building?
Yeah, we have a building under construction.
Where'd you put it?
It's at Stapleton. It's on Montview. It'll be ready for occupancy January 3rd, 2005.
So that's fantastic. So here's the newest, most exciting high school in this new neighborhood. Perfect, really.
Yeah, and we'll open August 30th, just for ninth graders, 139th graders.
Yep.
And we're going to use the old Matchbuff High School in Park Hill, which is Montview and Elm.
And it's a neighbor of yours.
Yeah, it's a mile and a half down the road. And what's interesting is it's been a sort of an incubator for charter schools, because the Odyssey School, which is an incredibly successful charter, also located at Stapleton, was there for 3 years before their building got completed.
Okay, and then you're going to open your building January
3rd.
Okay, all right. Well, that's pretty good. So you have 139th graders. You spend 4 months telling them how great the new building's going to be.
Right.
And then they get there, and they'll be all excited.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to make them suffer for 4 months, and then, it'll be like going to heaven.
Does a Denver High School, Denver School of Science and Technology, do you have football teams? Do you bother with that stuff?
Yeah, well, we actually decided, because we're a science and tech school, that one of the first things we had to do to make it attractive to all kinds of kids was to sort of de-geekify it.
Yes.
Okay? So the de-geekification, the first thing we did was we said we're going to do a sports program. And so we spent a lot of money putting in two championship soccer lacrosse fields, a full gym, aerobics room, weight room, and so that kids would feel, that they're not going to some kind of weird place. And then the other thing we did was we brought in kids to actually design the school.
Oh, that's fantastic. You mean kids from the Denver Public Schools?
Kids from the Denver Public Schools of that age. Yeah. And they did everything from pick the colors of the school, pick the chairs. They told us what they hated about standard schools, which is the answer is they hate sort of corridors with lockers on both sides and brick everywhere.
Yeah, that's the grim picture of high school.
Yeah.
I've got it, yeah.
So they wanted something cool, so we put in things like outdoor courtyards. And then, of course, one of the more attractive features of the school is that it's a wireless laptop school. So every kid
everywhere
gets every kid gets a laptop. And what that means is that every inch of the school is a teaching area. So we can use the cafeteria, we can use the gym, and we can use the outdoor courtyard. So any place the kids can be, they can be doing stuff.
That sounds like Silicon Valley High School to me. I mean, I'm surprised. Anybody else in Colorado doing this?
Probably not, to my knowledge. This school that's sort of the closest to us is High Tech High in San Diego, which has been around for about 5 years.
Yeah. What are the colors going to be of your school?
The kids are going to pick them.
Oh, they haven't yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the mascot they're going to pick?
The mascot, everything.
The lightning bolts, the Voltas.
Exactly.
Yeah,
right.
Something like those. Yeah, the chips, something like that. And how now, if we got listeners out there with a brilliant eighth grader who's good in science and tech, how can they get them into your school?
Well, the first thing is, under the charter law, we can't set minimum academic admission standards for the school. So we actually have – so what we decided to do was attract kids based on motivation, not on their grades. So what we did was we made the application process really tedious.
And how do you do this? What do you do?
We made it look like a college application. You have to write essays. You have to get recommendations, all this kind of stuff. Then
that's pretty smart that it's going to self-select out a lot of kids.
It did. And so it's not like you have to be a genius to come to this school. And, in fact, we have kids who range from kids who are going into ninth grade who could do pre-calculus to kids who have under a 1.0 grade point at DPS.
Really?
Yeah, so we have kids who can't even add fractions who are going to be coming to this school. And the assumption is if you give them enough encouragement, stimulus, and motivation, that they'll turn it around and they'll actually start.
If you could have set it up your way, would you have had an entrance exam, or is this the preferred way to do this?
The only thing we would set up would be a minimum graduation standard coming out of eighth grade.
And we don't have that now?
No, you can do social promotions.
And they do.
Which means you could have like a 0.1 average and get promoted in the system. So, but we actually, the other thing, we have two missions. The first is to be the premier school for science, math, and technology in Colorado. But the other equally important mission is to serve underserved populations. So we're 40% free and reduced school lunch kids, which means poor kids. And we have no majority ethnic population. We've got about roughly the same number of Anglo kids, Hispanic kids, and black kids. So it's a really diverse, both economically and ethnically, school.
That's fantastic.
And what kind of kids were willing to go through the hoops to get in this? I mean, did the self-selection process work? I mean, you got to be fairly motivated.
Yeah, you have to be. And also, once you get in, you and your parents have to come in for an interview. And the interview lasts an hour. And we talk to the kids for about a half hour, and then we talk to the parents for about an half hour. And then you have to sign a contract, a performance contract.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. So, the kids know what they're getting into. And one of the things we ask them is we say, well, how much homework are you doing now? And they'll go, well, half hour a day, something like that. And we go, well, how do you feel about doing 2 to 3 hours of homework every night, including weekends? And that sort of shakes out some of the kids right there. But so the kids who are staying, now the other sort of, pot of gold at the end of the rainbow is if you meet our exit standards, we're the only school in the state where you're automatically admitted to CU Boulder.
Oh, really?
So every kid walking in there.
Rule.
Yeah, especially for the poor kids whose parents probably didn't go to college. When they walk in the door in ninth grade, if they can stay in and do a good job, they have walked into college. And
oh, that's a terrific offer.
So that's really a big motivator, especially
well, suppose
for
suppose you go to East High.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty much the top of the class that gets into CU Boulder from there, isn't it? Don't you have to be fairly near the top?
I would say about the top 30% of suburban public school kids are eligible for CU Boulder.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, how did you arrange that? Is this because you had the governor behind you, or?
First of all, because I was commissioner of higher education.
That helps.
So I knew. Yeah. Second of all, Boulder, as you've seen reading the papers, is not exactly known for getting minority kids into the school.
Amazingly low numbers.
448 kids out of 25,000.
That's amazing.
So we come in and we say, look, we're enrolling all these low-income kids. Most of them are kids of color. And we're sort of vetting them for you, I mean, if they can survive our place, they'll survive Boulder. And Boulder said, yeah, you're right, So we're essentially sort of the headhunters for Boulder.
Oh, that's a fantastic deal for both sides.
Yeah.
Man. Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty, it must be appealing to parents.
Yeah, we have parental involvement as part of the contract.
What do they have to do?
Number one, they have to make sure the kids are doing what they're supposed to do. Number two, they have to volunteer in various ways for the school. Number three, they have to show up for all the parent conferences and things like that. And a lot of them are offering to do all kinds of cool stuff on behalf of the school. So,
that's great.
And that also is an interesting deal because the mix of parents, there's a lot of these people who would not, under normal circumstances, ever cross paths. Okay.
With the principal or the. Yeah.
Well, no, because some of these people, are incredibly affluent, and some of these people are incredibly poor. And
oh, I see. With each other, yeah.
When would they ever meet each other?
Oh, that's great. Okay. So when we come back, we're going to find out what you can learn if you're a student at the Denver School of Science and Technology with Dave Greenberg. We're here on the Enid Goldstein Show on AM 1150 KNRC.
Info.
What's up?
The scoop.
The latest.
What do you know?
What's new?
Listen and we'll tell you. Hear Colorado Talk. AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, this is Doug Kellett. Tune in Tuesdays and Thursdays at 4:55 as I discuss financial issues of the week with Willis Ashby of Integra Financial. Right here on AM 1150 KNRC.
For anyone who's ever spent a Saturday morning pulling on the cord of a gas-powered string trimmer, now there's a better way to do yard work. Black & Decker Cordless Outdoor Products. A full line of string trimmers, hedge trimmers, and hard surface sweepers that require absolutely no gas. No cord to pull. No complicated starting instructions to follow. Just hit the switch, and you've got up to 18 volts of power to get the job done. Go to your local retailer today and ask for Black & Decker Cordless Outdoor Products. Or go to blackanddecker.com for more details.
Ready to make a difference in your home? Then visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store, where you'll find special June savings on all the colors you love. Save $7 a gallon on Super Paint Interior, our best-selling interior paint. Plus, get a free DVD on decorating with color with a purchase of $50 or more. And to sign up for free color workshops, call 1-800-4-SHERWIN. When it comes to paint and wallpaper, it's what we do, it's all we do. Ask how, ask now, ask Sherwin-Williams. For a store near you, visit SherwinWilliams.com.
KNRC presents Bill Maher at the Paramount Theater Saturday, June 12th.
I will give George Bush credit for this. He is working a lot harder than he thought he'd have to.
For tickets, visit HOB.com.
You know what? You got to get over that. Al Gore lost that election all by himself by maintaining his pledge to end charisma as we know it.
Or call 303-830-8497.
Seriously, the Republicans did not steal that election. It did fall off a truck.
Bill Maher at the Paramount, June 12th. Brought to you by AM 1150 KNRC.
The 2004 Chautauqua Summer Concert Series is here. Spend a memorable summer night in the historic setting of Chautauqua Auditorium in Boulder and hear great artists from around the world and across the musical spectrum. On Saturday, June 19th, see the legendary John Hiatt at Chautauqua. For complete lineup and tickets, visit Chautauqua.com. The 2004 Chautauqua Summer Concert Series, brought to you by AM 1150 KNRC.
I'm Mark Haynes, CNBC Business Radio. If you're looking to hold on to a piece of former President Ronald Reagan, eBay is giving you that chance. A flood of memorabilia hitting the online auction site after Reagan died last weekend at the age of 93. The nation's 40th president had spent the last decade battling Alzheimer's disease. While Reagan had trouble holding on to his memory, many people around the world are paying big bucks so they don't forget the former leader of the free world. Some of the items listed on eBay include signed memoirs and photographs with price tags of $4,000 and up. If that's too tough on your pocketbook, there's a $150 Air Force jelly bean jar bearing Reagan's signature in gold. By the time you hear this, though, it may be gone. What about a pair of Ronald and Nancy's caricature bedroom slippers? Price tag there, only $15. However, as the bidding war intensifies, the price on many items could get pretty expensive. So if you're interested, you may want to get your bids in soon before the auctions come to a close. Mark Haynes, CNBC Business Radio.
Have a financial question? Email us, Integra at KNRCRadio.com, and Willis Ashby will respond. Integra at KNRCRadio.com. Listen to Willis Tuesdays and Thursdays at 4:55, exclusively with Doug Kellett on AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, this is Bill O'Reilly. Join me live every weekday morning from 10 till noon here on AM 1150 KNRC. Now back to Enid Goldstein.
Yeah, if only we could go back to the great Enid Goldstein, but Enid's off today, and so you're stuck with T.R. Reid filling in for Enid on AM 1150 KNRC. Fortunately, we have a very interesting conversation today with Dave Greenberg, the CEO and founder of the brand new Denver School of Science and Technology, which is going to open in September. The Denver, Colorado's high-tech high school is what it's going to be. So Bill Gates kind of was the originator of this concept. Have you kept him informed on what you're doing?
Yeah. We haven't talked directly with Bill Gates.
Yes.
Hopefully we would someday.
Uh-huh.
But
get him to come out and give the first diplomas or something.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is spending about $150 to $200 million a year around the country to try to change high schools. And the theory is, well, first of all, urban high schools are a disaster, okay?
Yes.
Reading the paper, about 50% of Hispanic kids drop out.
Gosh.
You know, the numbers are terrible. Suburban schools do much better.
Yeah.
But so Gates came up with the theory that part of the problem is that these schools are too big, they're too impersonal, and kids get lost. So he decided to, and basically if you look at a high school, it's sort of the Henry Ford model, and that's basically when these schools
were designed. It's a factory is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, you put as many kids as you can in, teach them all the same way, and then hopefully they walk out 4 years later.
Okay.
Works right in the suburbs pretty well. So Gates decided to sort of figure out what might work. So he hired a guy named Tom Vander Ark. And Vander Ark is head of all the education programs done by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
Okay.
And Vander Ark has a local angle in that he was raised here, and his father's a very prominent doctor here. And,
oh, I see.
And he went around looking at schools all around the country, mostly urban schools, and seeing which ones actually seemed to be successful, which ones had higher graduation rates, which ones work better with poor kids, things like that. And he ended up coming up with this audacious plan to build 1,000 new high schools in America based on certain design principles.
That is audacious.
Yeah. And very expensive, I might add.
And do they have to be public? Is that part of the drill?
They can be public schools. They can be charter schools. They can be they can even be religious schools, because there's a very famous school in Chicago called Cristo Rey, which is a Catholic school,
yeah,
which requires all the kids to essentially take jobs starting in ninth grade and pay for part of their education. Uh-huh. And Gates has funded like 9 of those schools around the country, including Arupe, which is located in Colorado, in Denver.
Uh-huh.
So all different kinds of model, rural schools. And really, not only the real design principles are school has to be small.
Yeah.
And generally, they don't want more than 100 kids in a grade.
Okay.
And it has to be kid-focused. And what that means is that every child has a meaningful relationship with an adult. So every kid is known.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay, so you
that's
can't get lost.
Pretty obvious rule, but hard to do in a big school.
It's almost impossible to do in a big school.
Yeah.
You know, my school will end up having 425 kids.
Yes.
9th through 12th grade. My daughter went to Cherry Creek High School. She had 938 kids in her grade. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's what Gates is doing. And there are different miles around the country. They gave money, for example, to New York City public school system to create, I think, 50 new schools.
Wow. Okay.
And there were all different models. One model, for example, is you go to the school is located on a community college.
Yep.
You go for the first 2 years. Your last 2 years, you're getting college credits. And you are able then to transfer to a college, essentially having finished the first 2 years.
Got it. Okay.
So it's really audacious.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. It saved the parents money, too.
Absolutely.
In theory, yeah.
You know, and as you know, because it's so experimental, they're going to have some spectacular successes and some spectacular failures.
Of course, yeah. They've done a few others in Colorado, you're saying?
Yeah, we got about, I think it was $9 million in total, about most of the money was donated to the Colorado Children's Campaign, who then created a program called the Small Schools Initiative, which is still running under Vance Goals.
Oh, really?
And then we at Science and Tech got a separate grant. But the money that came to Colorado, a lot of it went to try to work with Manual High School, which is breaking up into 3 different small schools. And then some of it went to create very specialized small schools in the Denver area. Like there's a school called Skyline, which I think has like 60 kids in it, and it's
interesting
almost one-to-one education. It's almost like every day the kid works with a teacher to say, "What are we going to learn today?" I mean,
is there any place in American education where people are advocating big schools?
Well, the thing about big schools is you can offer more things, okay?
So
you look at Cherry Creek High School, which is sort of the industry standard in Colorado for a good big high school.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you have 5 different languages you can take. You might have 20 AP courses you could take.
Yes, right.
You know, you can
team and everything.
Everything, you know, theater. Yeah. They can just do a huge amount of stuff. The problem is, you know, for the top 20%, it's awesome. For the bottom 10%, you know, they're sort of keeping an eye on you, but if you're in the middle somewhere, you know, you can get lost, you know?
Yeah. You know, as you know, we lived in Japan. I wrote a book about the Japanese school my kids went to, and there the principal apologized to me that the classes were so small. There were 25 or 26 in this inner city Tokyo school. She thinks 40 is the right size because then they can break the kids into 5 groups of 8, and groups of 8 are the way to learn, and it, you know, everything's group in Japan.
Wow.
But there's nobody in America apologizing because their school is too small, I don't suppose.
I don't think so. You know, one of the interesting things is that middle-class parents tend to think a bigger school with bigger offerings is the way to go, okay? But if you look at what wealthy parents do, they send their kids to very small private schools. Okay?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And you sort of wonder, you know, if you follow the money, why are they making that decision rather than going to the big suburban schools.
And we're guessing they know something.
Exactly.
Yeah,
you know?
that the rest of us haven't. I can certainly see, particularly, yeah, you're right, for the guy who's not at the bottom and not the two brightest kids in the class, you can get lost in there and not know an adult.
And if you look at, for example, how guidance counselors work in public schools, okay, there's usually one guidance counselor for about 300 kids. Okay, there's no way they can know anything about them, other than a few spectacular kids or kids who are in trouble.
Yeah.
So at our school, we don't have a guidance counselor. We have every teacher and senior administrator has a portfolio of 15 to 20 kids, and you're responsible for those kids' academic and emotional well-being while they're at the school.
Are you starting this now for the kids entering in September, or are you going to start?
Absolutely.
Oh, you have?
Yeah. We've actually met with the parents. We have, like, monthly sort of coffees with the families.
Yeah.
We had about 160 families last Saturday, and they showed up at 4 o'clock in the afternoon from all over town.
Really?
And then we're going to do our own assessment. We're testing every kid June 19th to see what we think they are. I mean, they take the CSAPs and they get their grades, but we're going to do our own. And then we're going to try to tailor the curriculum to sort of meet the skills that we see in these kids.
Got it. Okay. Does not having... How are you going to deal with the fact that the kids are going to be 4 months without the real building? What do you do about that?
The fortunate thing is I'm not the head of school or the faculty. Okay, I'm just on the board.
Yeah,
you know? So,
well, you're running the place. But
Right now I'm running the place, but when the head of school comes, he's in charge. And he's an unbelievably great guy.
Where'd you find him?
We did the largest search for a charter school principal or head of school that's ever been done in the country. And we had 120 applicants from Europe and the United States.
Wow, that's amazing.
And he came out far and away the best. And his name is Bill Kurtz, and he's currently the head of school for the Link Community School, which is in the Central Ward of Newark, which is about two blocks from where the 1968 race riots occurred.
Yeah.
And he's got a middle school. It's a non-denominational Christian school, and it's 130 7th and 8th grade African-American kids. 98% of them are on free and reduced school lunch. And what they do there is they raise the kids' test scores, and then they place them either in independent schools like Exeter or Lawrenceville or those, or in very good Catholic high schools. And they have about a 95% success rate.
That's terrific.
And this guy... the cost $11,000 per kid, and he raises $1.5 million a year. So the average kid pays $1,000 to go to this school.
Well, that's could be hefty though if you're inner city.
Yeah, but given the opportunity,
what you're getting out of it, it's a bargain.
So we brought him, bringing him over here.
All right. So in a minute, we're going to talk about how you got the money and how much money you got to start the new Denver School of Science and Technology. But first, let's take a break for the news with Tim McLaughlin on KNRC AM 1150.
Award-winning news and entertaining talk. This is AM 1150 KNRC.
Mostly sunny and 73 degrees now. A suspect was shot by an Adams County Sheriff's deputy this morning. I'll have that story in a moment. First, let's check traffic with Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
Eastbound I-70 approaching Colorado Boulevard. Accident with injury starting to cause some tie-ups in there. A lot of fire rescue equipment responding in even as we speak. Outbound in the Boulder Turnpike at Sheridan, watch for a stalled motorist there. Could be causing you some congestion problems as well. Everything else around town starting to load up for the afternoon rush, but volume figures to be a little lighter today, what with it being the national day of mourning. Bowles and Coal Mine injury accident. Neither of the cars is drivable, so they could be sitting there for a few minutes. That intersection is just east of the interchange of C-470 and Bowles. Chevron with the information. If you think all gasolines are alike, well, think again. Many can leave harmful deposits on vital engine parts, but Chevron with Techron helps clean up deposits and helps your car perform like it should. Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
A deputy from the Adams County Sheriff's Office shot a suspect about 9 this morning. The suspect had been arrested earlier this morning and had been taken to the Platte Valley Medical Center in Brighton. He allegedly tried to escape and was shot by the deputy. The suspect has been transported to St. Anthony Central in critical condition. This report brought to you by ONDCP. The State Health Department has confirmed the first 2 human cases of West Nile virus in Colorado this year. A 30-year-old Pueblo County man and a 35-year-old Adams County woman are both recovering after contracting the mosquito-borne disease. Neither had to be hospitalized. 2 more women have come forward saying they were sexually assaulted by a man who's accused of pretending to be a doctor. Earlier this week, 3 women made the same accusation against 44-year-old Michael Ricks, who at different times allegedly claimed to be a massage therapist, a physical therapist, and a chiropractor. He's being held at the Douglas County Jail. If you suspect your teen is having a problem with marijuana or alcohol, take action. Talking to them is the first step. Early detection can save a life. Action, the anti-drug. We'll check the KNRC weather forecast next. KNRC News Time is 2:37.
AM 1150 KNRC, the way Denver spells talk radio. KNRC.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine, and I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 800-851-8966. It's guaranteed. Call 800-851-8966. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 800-851-8966. Call now. 800-851-8966.
Taking a look at the KNRC weather forecast, mostly sunny and breezy for us this afternoon. Clear skies for tonight will cool off to the mid to the upper 40s. For tomorrow, partly cloudy, upper 70s for the high temperature. Mostly sunny and 73 now. KNRC News Time is 2:39. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 3 o'clock or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
SL Roofing.
I need to call XL Roofing right now.
Wait! I'm on hold with Sid's Tattoos and Roofs. They're going to give me a better deal.
I told you I don't want a free tattoo.
Hold on. Yeah, Sid. You'll give us 2 free tattoos with a new roof. Wow.
Wow. You should get sucker tattooed on your forehead.
But we get 2. Where are you going to put yours? How about on your right?
We are not getting tattoos. Give me the phone. I'm calling XL Roofing right now. Hello, XL.
Don't be a sucker when it comes to your new roof. Hi, this is Jay with XL Roofing. At XL, there are no gimmicks, just a great roof at a great price. Call XL Roofing at 303-761-6400. XL has over 7,000 satisfied customers in the Front Range. Remember, at XL, you won't pay a dime until your roof is done and you're fully satisfied. Call XL Roofing at 303-761-6400.
XL Roofing, we're on top of it.
Where will we send Justin next?
What's going on? Here.
Find out by keeping your radio locked in at AM 1150 KNRC. KNRC. And now the Enid Goldstein Show continues on AM 1150 KNRC.
It is the Enid Goldstein Show continuing, but sadly without Enid today, we're stuck with T.R. Reid filling in. That's me. And we're talking to Dave Greenberg, the CEO and founder of the new Denver School of Science and Technology. So you're opening this exciting new school at Stapleton. You've taken 130 kids of very disparate backgrounds. You're going to give them an education focusing on science and technology. But if you have all these different kids from different families and everything, you have to give them the standard test that Colorado gives everybody else?
Yeah, absolutely. We take the same test as any other public school, which is the CSAPs, and then they take the ACTs in 11th grade.
And how are you going to do this? You have some kids coming in with very low school averages and some kids who are brilliant. What do you do?
Well, first thing is we are hiring more faculty than the normal ratio for a public school.
Okay.
And since we
let's talk numbers. What do you mean?
Well, our ratio of faculty to students to faculty is 16 to 1. Okay.
Yeah. What would be the norm in a Denver public school?
Well, for us,
high school,
we figure that means about 22 kids in a class, and a DPS high school would be about 35 kids in a class.
Oh, yeah, that's a significant difference.
So that's number one. Number two is we have the only courses that we're going to do tracking is math and Spanish. And math, because there's such a disparity, and you really can't put all the kids in the same room.
Yes, exactly.
And Spanish, because we're going to have kids in there who are native Spanish-speaking kids, and you can't put them in there with kids.
Right. Yeah.
So everything else we're going to mix together. And part of that is based on the idea that kids can help teach each other. So
I totally agree with that, yeah.
So we think, and the other thing is these kids have very high expectations of themselves. They walk in the door, they are told the first thing, you're going to college. In ninth grade, first question is, what kind of college do you want to go to? Start teaching about the process, starting in ninth grade. So they're really focused on that. And we think that
this would not happen to every kid walking into East High.
No, because East High has essentially two different populations. And, in fact, they're having that's a big subject of controversy.
Yeah.
Because they have one group of kids who are in what's known as the X classes, which are all these AP courses, and is a fabulous program. And then they have the general population who doesn't have anywhere near that level of performance or expectations.
Do the twain meet?
They meet on the athletic fields.
Okay.
But so we're trying to deal with that problem by mixing everybody together and telling everybody we have expectations for them.
Everybody.
Everybody.
Yeah. That's pretty Japanese. They definitely do that in Japan. Everybody's supposed to be an A student. That's the plan. So what do you do then in a physics course, for example, with a kid who's still in the lower math course? How's that going to work?
I think what we're going to do is essentially everybody takes the same course, but then you have what's known as a honors option, which means you would get more homework or additional test questions and stuff like that. And that's done in a lot of independent schools, and it seems to work very well, and it keeps everybody in the same room.
Got it. Okay. And then the kid who moves up fast can go into the honors division
or
something.
The honors thing is also normally self-selecting. So if you want to go in, you can go in. And if you don't want to go in, you don't have to go in.
Well, that's kind of – but if you think about the kids who went through the difficult application process to get into your school, they're probably going to self-select into honors. What do you think?
It depends whether they like physics or not. We're a liberal arts school with an emphasis on science and technology, but we also, humanities, English, history, and all that.
Yes.
So, and we don't expect every kid to graduate. We expect every kid to graduate and go to college, but we don't expect every kid to be involved in science, math, and technology. And if we produced a poet who could write knowledgeably, who could about, science. That would be fine with
marvelous.
Us.
Marvelous. Yeah, yeah. I know that in science education, there's a concern that the basic courses deal with rules and formulas, and they bore kids and drive them away from science. And there's a movement to try to show kids at the beginning how exciting science is.
Right.
Is this going on in high school, too? And it's going on in college, too.
That's the basis of our teaching, which is to figure out ways to make it relevant. So a lot of our teaching is what's known as project-based teaching. So
what does that mean?
It means that instead of just telling you a fact, we have you work on something so you understand why you need to know it. Okay? So,
yeah, that's useful.
And that works really well with subjects like physics or biology.
Yeah.
The other thing we have is mandatory internships in your junior and senior year. So what you do is you elect to specialize in one of three areas, engineering and architecture and design, or life sciences, or IT and media.
Yeah.
And then you take an extra class in that, and then your internship for example, might be if you're life sciences, you might work for a company who's doing biotech at Fitzsimmons. Or if you're,
oh, fantastic.
If you're doing engineering.
And your campus is right next to the new
medical school. Yeah, we located there partially for that reason. And the other reason we located there is because Forest City Stapleton gave us 10 acres of land for free.
That's pretty nice.
Yes.
Yeah,
that's
not bad. Yeah. And they're bragging about you, of course, that they have this great school right there, so come live here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that all works. Yeah. Kind of a win-win for everybody. But I've been trying to figure out, I don't know if maybe this isn't your realm, but I've been trying to figure out how they do it. There are certain formula and rules you've got to know.
Right.
To learn science, and I'm not quite sure how you do the putting off of that stuff so as not to drive kids away.
Well, I think...
Has that worked out, or...?
Yeah, well, I think... Well, first of all, we've hired, like, incredible teachers.
Yeah, that helped.
We have one teacher who was twice Science Teacher of the Year in Wyoming.
Really?
We have a science teacher she's just completing a program in microbiology at the Harvard Med School.
Oh, fantastic.
So these are people who are, like, incredibly enthused about what they're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're also sort of have, you know, we have four Teach for America teachers.
These are, they're just out of college?
They spent 3 years after college working in really tough, challenging teaching situations.
Yeah,
And they're, you know, they're young and they're cool and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
And our teachers have taught... in China, in Paraguay, in Senegal, in Philippines. So, you know, I mean, they're very interesting people. And a lot of this stuff goes down a lot easier if you like who's teaching it.
Totally agree with you. Yeah. I can definitely remember sitting in a calculus class, and the question was, well, the searchlight rotates at a rate of such and such, and the waves are lapping on the beach, and how often does the searchlight overlap each wave? And in some way, but why do I care? That's
right,
what
exactly.
You know, it would help if a teacher would tell me what I'm going to do with this eventually.
Right. Well, that's what the project base, I mean, High Tech High does a really cool, one of the really cool projects is they compete in the national man-powered submersible competition. Now, what that means...
What is it?
Means you have to design a submarine that can be operated...
There's a kid inside pedaling.
Exactly,
like crazy.
Exactly. A kid with scuba gear. Okay, so you have all kinds of interesting questions like, how do you keep the thing from sinking, number one?
Oh, yeah.
How do you design it so it can go forward rather than down or up? Those things. And all those things require physics. They require math. They require architecture and engineering.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's very... And those kids... And they require materials. I mean, what should you build it out of?
Oh, yeah.
So,
and how far do the winners go?
I think they have to go 150 feet.
They have to go 150.
Yeah, and it's timed.
Oh, okay. Really?
Yeah.
Oh. To me, it's a little scary, the submerged part of it.
Every kid got scuba certified. As part of the deal.
I see. Oh, that is really exciting.
So they learn biology. They learn all that kind of stuff as well.
Some country we lived in, I remember a human-powered flight competition where the college kids would build an airplane.
Right.
Some guy pedaling like crazy, and some of them would go 100 yards or more, and some of them just crash off the launching plan. Yeah,
so, you know, see if you can come up. And there's a whole sort of menu now of these kind of project-based. Experiences, and you can sort of pick and see which ones are relevant. The one area that seems not, that I haven't seen anything that works very well, is trying to teach math.
Yeah. Well, math can be beautiful.
It can, but you can't, you've got so many, what you're talking about, it's such a sequence. If you miss, like, one sequence, and then
that's
you try
the problem.
To move on, you've missed it, and you're dead, you're confused, and you don't find out.
I have to say, Dave, when you and I... And probably some listeners out there were learning trigonometry. You had to open the book and run your finger down the chart and pick out the right six-digit number.
Right.
And I watch my kids doing trig. They just punch in on a calculator and the number is there. It's vastly easier. And to me, it makes sense.
Well, our goal down the road is to be sort of a textbookless school.
Oh, is that right? And you can do this?
Well, you can't do it today, but we think you can move towards that. Now, the only thing we wouldn't do is, you know, we believe that, we don't believe in e-books. In other words, we think if you're going to read a book like Catcher in the Rye, you ought to have the paperback in your hands. You know?
Okay.
But if you think about it...
I don't have anything against e-books. What are you, you're a Neanderthal in this?
I am a Neanderthal. Yeah, yeah. It's not my choice, actually, because the head of school
figured
that out.
Hey, you're the CEO.
Well,
I'm blaming you.
Yeah, only for another few weeks.
Okay.
But if you think about it, so you get it. My son last year had a textbook with this hilarious name, which is Geometry for Enjoyment and Challenge.
Okay? Yeah.
And it costs $60.
Oh,
okay. And
yeah.
Really, if you looked at it, you're only using 3 pages a day to do problems or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So you should be able to buy the rights to load that up electronically and then just have the kids, you know, do the 3 pages and send it back to the teacher. And that's sort of technologically what we're
makes sense to
for.
Me.
Yeah.
And we'll, unfortunately, we got to come back to that in a minute. After we take a break here on KNRC AM 1150.
Lock us in on your first preset. AM 1150. KNRC. KNRC. The way Denver spells talk radio. KNRC. KNRC.
Find out more about Fast Tracks, the Denver metro area's proposed new mass transit network. Log on to fasttracks.org to get informed. Paid for by Fast Tracks, yes.
Ah, nothing beats a warm Colorado evening relaxing on the patio while something delicious sizzles on the barbecue. Does your gas barbecue grill pass the test? Hi, this is Keith Lair with Lair Fireplace and Patio inviting you to visit any of Lair's 3 beautiful metro area showrooms to see Colorado's best selection of quality gas barbecues, including premium gas grills from MHP. Using only state-of-the-art materials and workmanship, MHP grills are built to withstand Colorado's harsh environment with unique features you simply won't find on ordinary barbecues. Since 1961, when they invented the world's first gas grill, MHP has been leading the way in quality. Family owned and operated since 1954, Lair's is Denver's oldest, most trusted name in gas barbecues. We also have the state's best selection of quality wrought iron patio furniture at Holly and Evans in Denver, 81st and Sheridan in Arvada, and just north of Arapahoe on Broadway in Littleton. There's a Lair's near you. For premium gas grills from MHP, it's Lair Fireplace and Patio, Colorado's barbecue experts.
Next.
I need something for my feet.
Yeah, I caught a whiff.
Right to the front. We got a guy here with smelly feet. Bring the good stuff. Tobacco Scholl's.
Thanks a lot.
Whoa, you must be the smelly feet guy. Here.
Dr. Scholl's deodorant foot powder?
Oh, yeah, it works immediately and lasts all day.
What about that gold?
Look, I've been in your shoes. Well, thankfully not your shoes. Dr. Scholl's is better. It has more odor-destroying power than that Gold Bond foot powder.
I'll take it.
He's taking the Dr. Scholl's, folks.
Dr. Scholl's foot powder. Get the odor out now.
Join the National Multiple Sclerosis Society for the 19th Annual Great West MS-150 Bike Tour and get ready to rock the rampart. The two-day 150-mile adventure begins on Saturday, July 10th at Conifer and traverses the Rampart Range through Buffalo Creek, Deckers, and Woodland Park. Last year, more than 1,900 participants raised $1.7 million to end the devastating effects of MS. To learn more or join this year's MS-150 Bike Tour, visit www.fightmscolorado.org.
Have a tough headache, every minute it hurts is a minute too long. Advil can give you faster relief than Tylenol for tough headaches. For faster headache relief, advance to Advil Relief.
At this time, while our fighting men and women are overseas fighting for our freedoms, let's enjoy this summer. But AM 1150 KNRC wants to salute those who are fighting the terrorists.
Our enemy is a radical network of terrorists and every government that supports them.
KNRC wants to salute those who are fighting terrorism. Thanks for all you're doing. AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, I'm Doug Kelly. Join me weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 here on AM 1150 KNRC. Now back to Enid Goldstein.
No, not back to Enid Goldstein, back to T.R. Reid sitting in for Enid Goldstein here on 1150 on a beautiful, glorious June day in the Rocky Mountains. Talking to Dave Greenberg, the CEO and founder of the brand new Denver School of Science and Technology, the newest Denver high school that's going to open this September. Now, Dave, you've had support from big money, Bill Gates, about as big as you can get. You've had support from power, Governor Bill Owens. What kind of support are you getting from the Denver School Board?
We've actually gotten wonderful support from the Denver School Board,
really?
And people always think that school boards hate charter schools.
Yes, I would think that, yeah.
Yeah, and these
kind of forced to accept them but don't like it.
Yeah, because they can't control them. But actually, they've been incredibly supportive. And to the point where we were included in the capital bond election last November.
In other words, our listeners voted to fund your school, whether they know it or not.
Yeah, we're getting $5 million from Denver Public Schools, and one of the first charter schools in Colorado for that to happen.
That's fantastic. So they really were behind you and are behind you.
They are, And we're trying to sort of reciprocate. So, for example, we're about 600 yards down the road from the Denver School of the Arts, which is this very great school. It's a DPS choice school.
Is it a high school?
Yeah, it's a high school. Yep. And they don't have any athletic program.
Oh, good.
So we're going to offer their kids to be able to participate in our athletic programs.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. So the math nerds and the artists, wouldn't it be fantastic if you beat Manuel in football some year? Or?
We won't have football, so I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah. In soccer then.
Yeah. Or, we're going to have,
That'll be the great day.
Yeah. We will play in 3A, which is the Metropolitan League. So we'll play with schools the same size as us.
Got it. Yeah. Smaller.
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe you'll have a state champ down the road someday.
Yeah. That'd be cool.
Yeah. But we need these kids to pick the colors and the mascot. Let's get cracking on this.
Yeah, well, I think, on athletics, I think our kids will probably do great in terms of designing new steroids,
Yeah, that's what they'll do. Give you an unfair advantage. So how much from the day Bill Gates and Bill Owens had this conversation to September when you open, mm-hmm. or let's say January when you open your new building, well, how much have you spent? How much money does it cost?
It's probably going to cost about $12 million for the building, and then the land was donated, and it's valued at about $3.5 million, and then we've got about $2 million in computing equipment and technology inside the school.
So $5 million came from the bond issue.
Yes.
And where'd the rest come?
The rest came from corporations, high net worth individuals, and a ton from the various foundations. We got money from every single major foundation in Colorado.
And I gather that was the CEO's job to go out and hit those people up.
Mine and Mark Holtzman, who's now the president of DU.
He's now doing it for DU on a bigger scale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that was, and then we also had a bunch of other people helping us out.
What should our listeners do if they have a brilliant kid who ought to go to your school?
Or a highly motivated kid.
Either way.
Go to our website, scienceandtech.org.
Scienceandtech.org.
And application and all the information's right there.
Got it. Okay. This is really a really exciting prospect for our city. I'm thrilled it's happening. And Dave Greenberg, thanks very much for coming in to tell us about the brand new Colorado's high-tech high school, the Denver School of Science and Technology. Thanks for listening. Enid will be back on KNRC AM 1150.
Hear Colorado talk. This is Colorado's locally owned and operated AM 1150 KNRC, Englewood, Denver's premier talk station.
KNRC News Time, 3 o'clock.
NBC News Radio, I'm Rosalind Jordan. The body of former President Ronald Reagan is on its way to its final resting place. Earlier today, President George W. Bush gave the eulogy during the official state funeral at the National Cathedral.
Ronald Reagan carried himself, even in the most powerful office, with a decency and attention to small kindnesses that also define a good life.
Mr. Reagan will be buried at sunset today at his presidential library near Los Angeles. Republican John McCain has formally rejected Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry's offer to be his running mate. The Arizona senator says he's not interested in a bipartisan ticket. And a state jury in Oklahoma is in day three of deciding whether to recommend life or death for Terry Nichols. Prosecutors want Nichols to die for his role in the 1995 Oklahoma City bombing, which killed 168 people. I'm Rosalind Jordan, NBC News Radio.
Get the good stuff.
Right now would be a good time to come to Napa Auto Parts, because now you can get a 71-piece Gear Ratchet professional tool set for only $49.99. This ultra-compact pass-through socket system virtually eliminates the need for deep sockets, making it one of the most versatile socket sets you can buy. This is the good stuff.